All right, welcome to the second day of the June 19th to 20th, 2024 meeting of the California Fish and Game Commission. Zoom webinar and phone participants have been placed on mute. When it's time for members of the public to provide comments, you will receive instructions on how to indicate you'd like to speak to that agenda item. Speakers will be unmuted individually. Now I'm going to hand it over to our Executive Director, Melissa Miller-Henson, for some technical notes.
Good morning, President Murray, and thank you. For members of the public, if you are participating in the Zoom webinar and calling in by phone, please make sure that your phone number and your Zoom webinar are linked. If you logged into Zoom first and use the Call Me option, the linkages happened automatically. Note that if you're joining by phone only and wish to speak to an agenda item, staff will identify you by the last three digits of your phone number. If you are having any technical difficulties with the meeting, please contact it@agpvideo.com. Again, that's it@agpvideo.com, which is the preferred method. Or if necessary, you may call 805-801-3576. Again, 805-801-3576. Now, the Zoom's chat feature is disabled for attendees, but commission staff may send messages to you regarding meeting management. Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa. Next, I'd like to make sure that we have a quorum so we can continue our meeting today. Sherry, could you call a roll to establish a quorum?
President Murray.
Here.
Vice President Zavaleta.
Here.
Commissioner Hostler-Carmison. Commissioner Sklar. Commissioner Anderson.
Here.
So we do have a quorum. Commissioner Hostler-Carmison is on her way and she will be here shortly. Melissa, if you could introduce commission staff and department leadership that we have participating today.
Absolutely. So today, again, Melissa Miller-Henson, Executive Director of the California Fish and Game Commission. To my right is your legal counsel, Michael Yon. To his right is Susan Ashcraft, your marine advisor. At the staff table, here to my left, we have Jennifer Bacon, Kelsey Laird, two of our analysts, and Ari Corman, your wildlife advisor. Also assisting us on Zoom and helping make sure things are running well in the background, we have David Thissell, Deputy Executive Director for the Commission, David Haug, Sherry Fonbuena, and Cynthia McKeith, three of our analysts. Kimmy Rogers is our Sea Grant Fellow. Sea Grant Fellow. Used to be. She's now our environmental scientist. Devin Rossi is our Sea Grant Fellow, and Jessica Shaw, our seasonal clerk. Joining us in person here are partners from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, our primary partner agency. We have Director Chuck Bonham. To his right is Deputy Director for Wildlife and Fisheries Division, Chad Dibble. And then to his right, we have the Acting Deputy Director and Chief of Law Enforcement, Nathaniel Arnold. And joining him at the table there is Assistant Chief Eric Cord with the Law Enforcement Division. We also have online Regional Manager for the Marine Region, Dr. Craig Schumann. So with regard to today's meeting, just some information for folks who may not be familiar with commission meetings. First, a warm welcome to members of the public who are joining us, I would say, all online. Welcome to a meeting of the California Fish and Game Commission. Both the commission and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife originated from a board of fish commissioners over 150 years ago. The commission's goals include preserving our wildlife heritage and conserving our natural resources through informed decision-making. And these meetings are vital in achieving those goals. In that spirit, we provide the following information to be as effective and efficient toward that end. We are operating under the Bagley-Keene Open Meeting Act, and these proceedings are being recorded and broadcast. In the unlikely event of an emergency, please note the location of the nearest emergency exits at your location. Items may be heard in any order pursuant to the determination of the presiding commissioner, which today is President Murray. The amount of time for each agenda item may be adjusted based on time available and the number of speakers. I'm not going to speak to the in-person. If you are online or on the phone, you will receive additional instructions in a few minutes. We will ask how many speakers we have before taking public comment, so please be prepared and listen closely for your name or phone number to be called. When you speak, please state your name and, if any, your affiliation. Please be respectful and note that disruptions will not be tolerated. Time is precious, so please be concise. If you don't already and you would like to receive meeting agendas or regulatory notices or other things about subjects of interest to you, please visit the Commission's website, www.fgc.ca.gov, and sign up for our electronic mailing list. If you want the Commission to consider a regulation change, all petitions for regulation change must be submitted in writing. And of course, there is a form for that. That's available on the Commission's website, or you may directly receive that from staff. For members of the public, if you have access to the internet and are not planning to make public comment, you may listen to the meeting via our regular webcast, again, from our website, www.fgc.ca.gov. You'll find the link on the right side. Please also make sure to silence your mobile devices and computers to avoid any interruptions. It's a good reminder for myself. All right. So more details with regard to public comments and joining the meeting. Of course, there is a webcast. If you are watching the meeting remotely and do not plan to comment on agenda items, you do not need to participate on Zoom. You can view our live stream from the commission website, fgc.ca.gov. There's also in-person participation. And then there's the third option of participating by Zoom webinar or phone. And again, if you're on Zoom webinar or phone, you will be asked to raise your hand at the beginning of an agenda item. So please listen carefully for the announcement that it is time to raise hands for an item, as the opportunity will be brief. For each item, the commission will take public comment in person first and then via Zoom webinar and phone.
Thanks, Melissa. Before we start the first agenda item, I'd like to ask elected officials and tribal council members or their representatives to raise their hands using the Zoom raise hand feature, or if you are using a phone, press *9 one time. When introducing yourself, please state your name, your title, the tribe or district or official you're representing, and tell us which agenda item or items you wish to speak on today. I don't see anyone sitting in the audience in person, so I don't need to give instructions for how to identify yourself in person. Sherry, do we have anyone who has raised their hand on Zoom?
No, we do not.
All right. Thanks very much. So that brings us to our consent items. And for today, we have only one consent item, which is agenda item number 23, restricted species permit application. David, if you would like to give comment or give instructions on how to give public comment on this item, please.
Thank you, Commissioner Murray, President Murray. This is the call for public comment on item on consent item 23. So please raise your hand now. This will be a short item. Items that are placed on the consent calendar are on there because they're expected to be routine and non-controversial. Consent items are generally voted upon without discussion, but commissioners can choose to remove and discuss an item, including when requested by a member of the public. Again, if you would like to raise your would like to comment on consent items 23, please raise your hand now. You can do so by raising your hand on Zoom by pressing *9 once to alert us that you'd like to speak. If you press *9 on your phone again, that will take you out of the queue. Once you've raised your hand, please do not lower it. Staff will collect your name and lower them all at once. Again, please raise your hand now if you'd like to speak on this item. Thank you.
Thanks, David. I don't see any hands raised. Can you confirm that that's right, Sherry?
That's correct.
So we can make a motion.
I move that the commission adopts the staff recommendations for item 23 on the consent calendar.
Second.
So we have a motion by Vice. Oh, excuse me. Oh, we do?
Sorry, we're having conflicting information. One of the staff said that the petition, the applicant does have his hand raised.
Great. I don't see any hands raised.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. So we do have a motion by Vice President Zavaleta and a second by Commissioner Anderson. Sherry, could you read the roll?
Vice President Zavaleta?
Aye.
Commissioner Anderson?
Aye.
President Murray?
Aye. So the motion passes unanimously. And that brings us to our discussion and action items for the day. Our first item is agenda item number 24, recreational fishing regulations for federal groundfish for 2025 and 2026, and fillet requirements at sea. David, if you could give us instructions on public comment, and then our marine advisor, Susan Ashcraft, will be the lead.
Thank you, President Murray. Now is the time. If you're participating in person, you should have already submitted your speaker card to the staff table. If you would like to comment on Zoom for item 24, recreational fishing for federal groundfish, please raise your hand now and leave it raised no later than 8:49. If you are participating on the Zoom webinar, please use the raised hand feature and keep it raised. If you're on the phone only, press star 9 to raise your hand once. If you press it again, it will lower your hand and take yourself out of the queue. When your name is called, you may need to unmute yourself by pressing star 6 on the phone or using the unmute button on Zoom. Again, once you raise your hand, please do not lower it. Staff will collect your name and lower all the hands at once. Please listen carefully for your name to be called. If you are unidentified as a name, please listen for the last three digits of your phone number. Again, if you are on Zoom and would like to provide public comment on item 24, recreational fishing regulations for federal groundfish, please raise your hand by 8:49. Thank you.
Thanks, David. And welcome, Susan.
Thank you, President Murray and commissioners. This is a notice hearing for the groundfish regulations. The commission biennially adopts regulations for federal groundfish as necessary for consistency with federal rules that go into effect January 1st of odd numbered years for recreational fishery. Since 2004, the commission has adopted recreational regulations for state-managed fisheries associated with federal groundfish species in the same rulemaking. Today's notice hearing will be followed with discussion in August and adoption in October. The proposed regulations are driven by and informed by the Pacific Fishery Management Council. At its June 6th through 13th, 2024 meeting, so just last week, the council approved recommended recreational regulations for the federally managed species. And at the time that the rulemaking was prepared, the messaging was prepared, the outcomes of that meeting had not yet been distributed. But today we have Craig Schumann from the Marine Region to give an overview of the details for what the council has proposed. There in your binder, there is a memo. So this is a case where the department is requesting to go to notice by memo, given that details about the actual preferred alternatives and selections will not occur until subsequent council meeting. So I'll turn it over to Dr. Schumann for his introduction.
Thank you, Susan. Good morning, President Murray, members of the commission. I'm sorry I'm not there to be with you in person. You're in Mammoth Lakes, one of my favorite places on earth. So I hope you're enjoying it out there and the weather's nice. As Susan mentioned, this is the routine biennial rulemaking for federal groundfish. The Pacific Fishery Management Council met last week and adopted or made recommendations for regulations for the next biennial cycle. We're in a somewhat of a unique situation because there were very few proposed changes. This is because of these significant in-season changes to seasons, depth restrictions, and bag limits that were approved earlier this year. As you may recall, we had some emergency action to adopt that in-season action. So those rules are expected to stay in place for 25 and 26. There were a few proposed changes, and those are to repeal minimum size limits for cabezon, greenlings, and California scorpionfish, remove minimum fillet size for California scorpionfish, and add a requirement that the entire skin remain intact on fillets of cabezon, greenlings, California scorpionfish, and lingcod. In the notice memo, we had indicated we may propose modifications to fillet requirements for state-managed species to include that skin requirement. However, in subsequent discussions with our state-managed program and stakeholders, we will not be proposing those changes at this time. There's other minor amendments to multiple sections to improve clarity for rules and several non-substantive changes proposed to correct errors or updated information. To ensure amended state regulations are in place before fishing begins in 2025, the department requests the Fish and Game Commission authorize publication of notice of its intent to amend recreational regulations in state waters. Approval of this request will allow for discussion and possible adoption of the proposed regulatory changes in summer and late fall of 2024. This will allow the commission to adopt state groundfish regulations that are consistent with and complementary to those taking effect in federal ocean waters in or around January 1, 2025. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have on the current rules.
Thanks a lot, Craig. I don't have any questions. This is fairly straightforward. You know, this is something we do biennially. We adopt recreational regulations for federal groundfish to be consistent with federal rules that go into effect January 1st of odd numbered years. So we're just going to notice today, again, very standard and straightforward. So no questions from me. Sherry, how many speakers do we have?
We have one.
Great. You can give the speaker 3 minutes, please.
Merritt McCray, go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Merritt McCray with the Sport Fishing Association of California. I just want to acknowledge and thank department staff for their outreach and working with us with respect to these regulations, both at the federal level, that would be Craig Schumann and Marcy Yaremko, and especially James Phillips, Diana Porzio, and Kirsten Ramey. Thank you all for your for getting in touch with us and working with the fishing community. I think it's really important. We hear a lot about families that are in the fishing industry, either providing public access to our rich California's rich marine resources, or supporting the public in other ways in their efforts to access those resources. I do want to mention, especially, and ask that the commission always consider the public access that these businesses, mostly small businesses, provide to the public. It's really important. We reach a broad spectrum of people across the state of all walks, those that can barely afford to buy a ticket to go on the sport fishing boats, and even those that have giant yachts and can get out there pretty much at will. I think this is super important, and as you move forward, not my fleet so much, but those people who provide those services to the public up in Northern California, please try to consider all of the impacts, the conservation measures that are being put in place simultaneously up there. This goes from about 36 degrees north all the way to the Oregon-California border. Thank you.
Thanks, Sherry. Thanks for that comment, Merritt. Really appreciate the, you know, the focus on coastal communities. You know, that's something that comes up all the time for us. Certainly, we have a coastal fishing communities policy that we've recently adopted, and you know, this idea of the importance of people and families and communities is something that really comes up in everything that we do. Certainly, came up yesterday as well throughout the day. So appreciate your comment very much. I also want to echo the thanks to the department, to Craig and Marcy and the team and everyone who, and this comes, you know, this comes to us as sort of an administrative thing that we sort of, you know, very standard that we approve, but I know there's a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes and working within the council as well. So many thanks to the department for the work on this. And with that, would somebody like to make a motion?
I'm happy to move that the commission authorizes publication of a notice of its intent to amend sections 27.20, 27.25, 27.3, 27.35 et al., and 28.65, Title 14, California Code of Regulations, related to recreational fishing regulations for federal groundfish, for consistency with and to complement federal rules in 2025 and 2026. And fillet regulations for select groundfish and state managed finfish.
Second.
So we have a motion by Vice President Zavaleta and a second by Commissioner Anderson. Sherry, could you read the roll, please?
Vice President Zavaleta?
Aye.
Commissioner Anderson?
Aye.
Commissioner Hostler-Carmison?
Aye.
President Murray?
Aye. So the motion passes unanimously. And that brings us to agenda item 25, Commercial California Halibut and White Seabass Set Gill Net. This is our discussion hearing for proposed amendments to regulations for commercial California halibut and white seabass gillnet fisheries. David, if you could make the call for public comment, and then we will hear from Susan.
Thank you, President Murray. Now is the time to raise your hand if you'd like to make comment on item 25, commercial California halibut and white seabass set gillnet. Please raise your hand no later than 8:59 a.m. If you're participating on the Zoom webinar, use the raise hand feature to raise your hand. Once you do, please keep it raised. If you are on the phone only and would like to raise your hand, press star 9 on the phone once to alert us that you would like to speak. If you press it star 9 again, it will take you out of the queue. Listen carefully for your name to be called. You may need to unmute yourself if calling on the phone by pressing star 6. Or of course, using the unmute button on Zoom. Again, if you're on Zoom and would like to provide public a comment on agenda item 25, commercial California halibut and white seabass set gillnet, please raise your hand no later than 8:59 a.m. Thank you.
All right, commissioners. So just a reminder that this proposed rulemaking is the initial phase of introducing management measures into the California set gillnet fishery with the objectives of reducing bycatch impacts on unintended marine life and improving data collection through filling data gaps. And the core tenets of this rulemaking are setting a new maximum net service interval, commonly called soak time, that limits the time nets remain to remain set to reduce bycatch mortality, to establish gear marking requirements that are standardized by adding a colored strap for easier identification and data collection, and third, a maximum net height or mesh depth that limits the net depth to target specific fish species. More details about the proposed regulation and its development can be found in your meeting materials in Exhibit 1. As a reminder, you authorize notice with two options. The first relates to the soak time. The soak time was noticed with options for a maximum net service interval of a requirement of a range of 24 to 48 hours, as well as a gear marking options with three color options for the required nylon strap. As part of its notice authorization, the commission requested that the department present a recommendation for the soak time and gear marking color options at the discussion hearing. And as requested, the department has provided those recommendations, and they are provided as Exhibit 5 in your meeting material. The department is recommending a 36-hour maximum service interval to strike a balance between reducing discard mortality and providing increased fishing flexibility. And for gear marking, the department recommends an orange-colored nylon strap as the identifying color marker for set gill nets from California, following consultation with industry members and assessing product availability. Note that the commission is not being requested to select the option at this time. You will have the opportunity to make that selection at the adoption hearing in August. In addition, there are several comments in your meeting materials, including one from Assemblymember Bennett. So those are in your materials as well as in your supplemental comments from and so for today, the department's available to answer any questions you have, and it will be Dr. Schumann, as Kirsten Ramey has a scheduling conflict.
Thanks, Susan. This is something we've been talking about for quite a long time, certainly at the MRC, and you know a fair bit already at the full commission level too. For me, I'd like to hold off probably on my comments until after hearing public comment, but it looks like we're not getting a presentation today. Craig, is there anything you wanna add to what Susan has introduced before we jump into public comment?
No, all the information's in the eyesore. Just draw your attention to figures 2 and 3. I think those are the key pieces of information to look at as we move into the adoption hearing.
Okay, great. Sherry, how many public speakers do we have on this?
We have 10.
10.
I'm not sure I understand.
Sorry. 10 speakers. Okay, if you could give everybody 2 minutes, that would be great. Thank you.
Okay, our first speaker will be Caitlin Birch. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, President Murray and members of the Commission. My name is Caitlin Birch, Marine Scientist for Oceana. We're very appreciative of all the work that has gone into the advancement of this regulatory package so far and look forward to further discussion today. We feel strongly that a 24-hour soak time is warranted for this fishery, given both the high rates of bycatch and mortality associated with the gear type. Longer soak times are associated with increased mortality across the board for species caught in this gear. And given this measure is the only measure presented in this regulatory package today and the phase 2 package that has the potential to reduce bycatch and wildlife impacts, we hope to see a strong maximum soak time discussed today. For gear marking, we support any improvements to better mark fishing gear. However, we feel the orange tracer every 15 to 30 fathoms fails to robustly mark the gear in a way that will either positively or negatively attribute the gear in the future documented whale entanglements. We hope to see ongoing discussions of gear marking improvements that would include uniquely manufactured lines, as is currently being done in other California fixed gear fisheries. Huge thank you to the department for all their work putting together this package for discussion today, and also for members of the fleet that have worked with the department to seek solutions to improve their fishery. And we really appreciate the opportunity to comment today. Thank you.
Our next speaker will be Naisa Lopez. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. My name is Naisa Lopez, and I am the Communications Coordinator for Minorities and Shark Sciences. I'm calling in today to support a 24-hour soak time for the SET gillnet regulatory package. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today.
Our next speaker will be Ben Grundy. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, President Murray, commissioners, and department staff. Ben Grundy with the Center for Biological Diversity. The Center for Biological Diversity supports the recommendations brought forth by the department and wishes to see them move forward in a timely manner to reduce bycatch in the California halibut set gillnet fishery. We appreciate the efforts of the department and commission to bring forth recommendations for the multi-phase management approach and are in support of a 24-hour maximum soak time. Soak time mortality data presented by the department at the November MRC highlighted the increase in percent mortality in the 25 to 36 and 37 to 48 soak time periods. Implementing a 24-hour soak time limit along with other key bycatch mitigation regulations will minimize the incidental catch of species of concern, including tope shark. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Our next speaker is Manelli. Go ahead, please. Manelli, you need to unmute.
Thank you. Thank you, members of the commission. My name is Manelli, and I'm a scuba dive instructor. The kelp forests are my second home, and I get to see firsthand the effects of unsustainable fishing practices season after season. The bycatch mortality rate is very concerning to myself and all my colleagues. So I'm here to advocate for a maximum 24-hour soak time for the kelp set gillnet fisheries. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Our next speaker is Laurel Irvine. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, commissioners and President Murray. My name is Laurel Irvine, director at a Southern California local nonprofit, Shark Allies. As Oceana and Center for Biological Diversity said, we fully support a 24-hour maximum soak time for these set gillnets in an effort to curb mortality of wildlife and what we are particularly concerned about with tope shark species. Thank you for your time and also your continued dedication to this regulatory package. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Terry. Go ahead, please. Terry, you need to unmute.
Okay. How about now? You got me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, my name is Terry Wilmarth. I am a fisherman. I've heard no fisherman comment on this. I'm asking for a 48-hour soak time. There's problems that arise when you're fishing, boat breakdowns, weather. You need to have a little bit of time to be able to solve some of the problems you have. Another thing, a 36-hour one really concerns me. It means I would be working at nighttime in the wind, in the dark. I think create more of a dangerous atmosphere. So I would really like to see that off the table. 48 hours, you know, I break down, I may need a welder. I need to meet a mechanic. These people aren't standing by waiting for me to call them. I have to work on their time. Gear, we catch trees sometimes. They come out of the rivers. We even get poison oak. These are things people don't know. But you need time to straighten your gear back out so you can get back to work. There's just unforeseen obstacles that are not being mentioned here. Another thing is, what happens in the winter is totally different than what's going to happen in the summer. Your weather conditions, the swells, the power of the swells, the movement of the bottom. You have rivers that are flowing, trees are coming out of it, bamboo, all kinds of uglies. We try to do things in a safe and environmental, as good stewards to maintain a good fishing practice. So please consider a 48 hours, 24 hours. It works when everything's wonderful, but sometimes even the ocean shuts down. The fish don't move. It's kind of a good carbon footprint not to be running every day when there is no fish moving. And you'd like to leave your gear in the water so when you do come back, you do see if there's some activity. That's about all. Thank you for my time. And please consider a 48-hour. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Esma Wilcha. Go ahead, please.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Esme. I've lived on the California coast almost my entire life, and I've witnessed firsthand the destruction caused by gillnet fishing over and over. I've done countless school projects about the awful bycatch impacts and things like that over the 15 years that I've lived here without seeing virtually any change. And because of this, I very strongly support enforcing a maximum 24-hour soak time. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Our next speaker is Julia Floyd. Go ahead, please.
Hi, my name is Julia Floyd. I'm also a scuba dive instructor here in Southern California. I see the impacts of unsustainable fishing, and I support the 24-hour soak time so we can protect our oceans and our beautiful marine life. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Our next speaker is Chance Cutrano. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you very much. This is Chance Cutrano with the Resource Renewal Institute. We're in support of many of the recommendations here, but in addition, we support the 24-hour maximum soak time. We appreciate that staff are trying to strike the right balance, and the Resource Renewal Institute believes that the adoption of a 24-hour maximum soak time with weather and extraneous circumstance exceptions is probably the best way to do that. There's substantial evidence that demonstrates that soak times longer than 24 hours drastically decrease the survivorship of all species and decrease the quality of the target catch as well as, you know, entanglement and depredation impacts. So we're supportive of the 24-hour maximum soak time. We're also very supportive of the gear marking improvements. And, overall, we're just grateful to the commission and CDFW for developing a suite of regulatory measures to make these improvements and address wildlife impacts in the said gillnet fisheries. So thank you very much.
Our final speaker on this item is Zachary Eric Killian.
Hello, members of the commission. My name is Zachary Arakelian. I'm a dive instructor here in California, and I have a master's degree in public administration. So I'm familiar with the importance of having regulation, why we need it. Every day I see these devastating effects of overfishing in our marine ecosystem. Gillnet fisheries with their extended soak times are particularly destructive, often trapping and killing countless non-target species, including endangered marine life. So I'm here to advocate for a maximum soak time of 24 hours for gillnets. No one likes change. Change comes with issues. As a diver, that's what we do every day, is put up with issues and change and adapt. So regulation is what we need to do. It's what we do in this municipal government. It's what we do in this state. And it's what we do in this country. It's essential to have accountability here. So this measure will significantly reduce bycatch and allow our marine environments to begin the healing process. We must act now to preserve the biodiversity and health of our ocean for future generations. Thank you for your time.
And that's our final speaker for the day, right? Or for this agenda item, right, Sherry? Yes, I think it is. All right, well, this is our discussion hearing, so I would love to hear from my fellow commissioners. Any thoughts about this agenda item?
Good morning, everyone. I do believe that the soak time should be 48 hours. Based on my experience and working with fishermen every day and knowing all of the issues that can arise in the ocean. Just as Terry had indicated, there's conditions that happen that you're not ready for. There's breakdowns and technical people are not available at night. Work extensively with commercial fishermen in Northern California. I know this is a Southern California fishery, but I would just really reiterate and also advocate for a 48-hour soak time when it is time.
Thank you for that, Commissioner Hassler-Carmison. Craig, I was wondering if there's anything you could say about the issue of safety at sea and soak times, and if there was, you know, a weather event or some kind of emergency, and how that might impact these soak times.
Certainly. So within the proposed regulations, we do have two provisions. One is under 174.1 subsection A1. That's the undue hardship exemption. Permit may request a waiver for exemption from set gillnet service interval requirement. It goes on. That's through our license and revenue branch. There's also within that same section a proposal for an unsafe weather exemption as well. And there are some specifics as to what the permittee needs to do. Again, you know, this is not something we'd want to see every day. But, you know, as the comments are brought up, you know, things happen in the ocean, things happen with boats. Weather comes up. It's not always predicted to come up the way it does. So that's why we have those provisions in place.
Thanks a lot, Craig. Vice President Zavaleta.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone. I mean, broadly, I support this direction. A lot of aspects of this regulation make a lot of sense. And I appreciate that attention to sustaining safety and options for fishers who are working on the ocean in the comments that we just heard about that and from our speakers. Regarding soak time, so in reading, you know, what's out there in terms of data, some of the impacts that are described in the literature for the region, I just want to note, they rely on data that predate the closures of state waters on the mainland and on the island perimeters. And so, for example, there are seabird and juvenile white shark impacts described in some of the earlier studies that haven't occurred since the area closures were identified. And I just want to highlight that because we all need to be looking at the data, separating the data that are from before previous measures were implemented and then after, since those closures occurred. I also just want to sort of point to the data in the ISOR. Most nets are ready. Almost three quarters of boats are servicing their nets at an interval of 24 hours or less. So that's important. It's also clear in there that longer soak times do steadily increase mortality rates for bycatch. But I want to note that the biggest jump in mortality happens as you go from soak times of 25 to 36 hours to soak times of 37 to 48 hours. So there is quite a lot to be gained in reducing mortality of staying below 36 hours. And it's also clear from the ISOR that halibut numbers caught per trip are greatest at that interval of 25 to 36 hours, not shorter or longer. So I understand 36 hours puts you in the middle of the night. I think, you know, folks have spoken to the need for flexibility. It's not that you have to service nuts in the middle of the night if there's a 36-hour maximum time. So, you know, I'm still interested in learning about this, chewing on it. But at the moment, I think something in that 24 to 36-hour range makes sense to me, sort of maximizes the gains for bycatch as well as preserving options for boats.
Thanks, Vice President Zavaleta. Commissioner Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I've had a few conversations with Oceana, so thank you for going ahead and providing me with the information. I have not had the opportunity to talk to anybody yet from the commercial fleet, and I would love to do so before we actually, you know, make this decision. I want to understand sort of what their concerns are from an operational standpoint. You know, bycatch has been something that I've been looking at for years and very concerned about. I want to come up with a solution that meets, you know, the needs of the NGOs, but also at the same time respects, you know, how difficult it is to be on the sea at different times. I think the department has done a very good job at, you know, adding additional items that allow for folks to call in or to communicate when seas are difficult and there is a challenging situation. So I think they've been understanding. You know, right now I'm in the 36 hour range. Do not believe that, you know, 48 is the right time, but I'd still like to talk to folks, and leave judgment, open.
Thanks, Commissioner Anderson. Yeah, it's surprising that, some of the commercial fleet, folks aren't here today. Oh, yes.
Yes, thank you. They did give us a heads up that they couldn't be here right, because it's the beginning of a white sea bass
season. Of course,
season.
They're fishing. Yeah, makes perfect sense. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's worth noting they have been extremely engaged throughout this discussion process over the last 2 years, showing up at every meeting, which is hard to do when you make your living fishing. So they've weighed in quite a lot. They've submitted letters, and they've been really generous with providing information. I'm also in the 24 to 36 hour range. You know, I like that we have safety measures, you know, exemptions in place for you know, making sure that fishermen aren't put in an uncompromising position when weather gets bad or there is an emergency. I'm looking at a graph that we've had at some point in the last 2 years that shows range of soak times and frequency reported by the California Set Gillnet Fishery. You know, 51% of folks are fishing with inside of a 24-hour soak time already, and then another 11% on top of that are within 36 hours. So that's reassuring to know that a lot of folks are out there. Well, there aren't a lot of folks in this fleet, but the folks that are out there, lots of them are already, you know, doing a 24-hour soak time. I think it's really important. I appreciate Vice President Zavaleta's comments about specifics and current science, current data. It's really easy to talk about bycatch in the abstract as this, you know, scary thing that nobody wants. And we all agree with that, right? I came into this issue thinking what a lot of people probably assume, which is this is a really dirty fishery. And, you know, it's something we're going to have to act fast on. And, you know, as I started to dig into the data, it's a lot more nuanced than that, right? And this is a multi-target fishery. It's a little bit of a misnomer to call it a halibut fishery or a sea bass fishery because it is a multi-target fishery and they're selling a lot of what's being landed. We do have multiple goals. Multiple things are true. We do, of course, want to reduce non-target, non-marketable, non-surviving species. We don't want to catch those. And I think that's true for NGOs, for fishermen, certainly for all of us up here. It is for me. But we also want thriving coastal communities. We want working California fishermen. I know that people in California want to eat local California seafood. I know that's important to a lot of people in California. And we don't want to export our problems to other places that have weaker laws, weaker regulations, and then just sort of, you know, it's called the transfer effect or conservation leakage, whatever you want to call it, right? We don't want to inadvertently cause more bycatch by just leaving it to somebody else to meet that demand that we certainly have in California. So I'm somewhere in the 24 to 36 hour range. We don't, for soak time, we don't have to decide that today. Again, I think it's really important as we move into the adoption hearing for comments to be specific. I know that, you know, without putting Chris Lowe on the spot, I know that he has weighed in and getting to Vice President Zavaleta's point, has weighed in saying that the side gillnet fishery is no longer really a threat to juvenile white sharks, right? That's something that one of the foremost experts on this issue who studies white sharks in California has said. So we have to be specific. We have to talk about the specific species we're working to protect when we're talking about bycatch with this fishery. So for me, like I said, I'm still somewhere in the 24 to 36 hour range. Commissioner Anderson.
And just one other thought too. I hope that, because right now it will be on the honor system and it will be, you know, with regard to our wardens actually going out and supervising this. And I hope that, you know, in the future, either through the NGOs or other investments from the state, et cetera, that we look at technology. So all of this can be done through data and technology, and to make sure that, you know, we lessen the burden on our wardens out there. Their job is already hard enough. And so I always think about how can we improve that?
Yeah, thanks for that. All right, well, unless there's any further discussion, we do not have a motion on this. This is our discussion hearing. And so that brings us to agenda item number 26. Which is fisheries logbook forms and fishing block charts. We're going to discuss proposed amendments to regulations for fisheries logbook forms and fishing block charts. David is going to make the call for public comment, and then we will go to Susan.
Thank you, President Murray. Now is the time to raise your hand if you'd like to comment on item 26. If you are participating on the Zoom webinar, use the raised hand button to indicate you'd like to speak. If you are on the phone, please press *9 to raise your hand once. If you press *9 again, it will take you out of the queue. Please listen carefully for your name to be called. And when it is, you may need to unmute yourself if on the phone by pressing *6 on the phone. Oh, sorry, I didn't give a time, did I? Please raise your hand no later than 9:20. Six. If once your hand is raised, please do not lower it. Staff will collect the names and raise your lower the names the hands all at once. Please listen carefully for your name to be called. Again, if you are on Zoom and would like to provide comment on agenda item 26, please raise your hand no later than 9:26. Thank you.
Great. Okay, commissioners. This is the discussion hearing related to proposed changes to fishing block charts and logbook forms. The adoption is scheduled for August. As a reminder, briefly, the department has a series of charts that define areas of commercial fishing activity. And these charts are referred to as block charts, fishing blocks, and are used to document fishing location for reported catch. The current charts in use have inaccuracies that have accumulated since they were introduced in 1934. So this is the first time to update the fishing block charts. The changes are aimed to provide more accurate information to support effective fishery management decisions, and I can't emphasize that enough. So this is a valuable opportunity to improve on that. It does wrap in changes to fishing logbook forms upon which the different fishery participant, different types of fisheries document the locations that they're fishing. The details are in the meeting materials, in the initial statement of reasons, and language and forms, and those are exhibits 2 through 4. The department is available for your, if you have any questions, and that includes Paulo Serpa. He is the one that has developed this, and he's online. Thank you.
Thanks, Susan. Commissioners, any questions or thoughts for Paulo before we go to public comment? Okay, Sherry, how many speakers do we have on this?
We have no speakers on this item.
All right. Well, this is our discussion hearing. So does anybody have any, we did talk about this a little bit when we went to notice as well. Any further thoughts that we want to share today?
I think it's a good thing. The more clarity and the less confusion for fishermen is very, very helpful. I hear it all the time. They complain about regulations that are confusing. So I fully support this.
Agree. Yeah. And I think having more precise data, finer scale data, fishing blocks that are not so large that we can't really detect nuance, I think that's incredibly important. So I agree. This is a bit of a no-brainer for me. It's something that we support and really, really appreciative of the department for moving forward on this, and Paulo for all your work on this as well. Again, this is just our discussion hearing, so no motion is necessary. All right. And that takes us to agenda item 27, which is experimental fishing permit application 2024-01. We're going to receive, consider, and potentially act on an EFP application to conduct exploratory fishing of brown box crab and to test on-demand buoy retrieval systems in deep water in Northern California. David, if you could make the call for public comment, and then we'll go to Susan.
Thank you, President Murray. Now is the time to please raise your hand if you'd like to speak on item 27, experimental fishing permit application 24-01. Please raise your hand no later than 9:30. If you're participating on the Zoom webinar, use the raised hand button to raise your hand and keep it raised. If you are on the phone only and wish to raise your hand, press star 9. Pressing star 9 again will take you out of the queue, so please do that once. And when you raise your hand, please leave it raised. Staff will collect all the names and lower all the hands at once. Please listen carefully for your name to be called. Again, if you are on Zoom and would like to provide comment on agenda item 27, experimental fishing permits, please raise your hand no later than 9:30. Thank you.
Great. This topic is to consider EFP application 2024-01, and it's intended to conduct exploratory fishing of brown box crab and to test on-demand buoy retrieval systems in deep water in central Northern California. As background, the applicant submitted this application in February for a Tier 4 exploratory fishing permit, and Tier 4 constitutes an experimental or exploratory fishery that requires direct engagement from the department to provide oversight. The project is intended to build upon a collaborative research program that has been in place for several years, since 2018, for brown box crab that involved the department, California Sea Grant, commercial fishing partners, and other stakeholders. The program has included exploratory fishing, a tag recapture study, and life history studies for brown box crab in Southern California. And the most recent progress on that front is that the commission in June of last year, a full year ago, approved a next phase experimental fishing permit for this effort in Southern California between Point Conception and California-Mexico border, and to test pop-up gear in this fishery as well as to continue to collect the biological data that they've been collecting for years. And would note that while the original EFP had a goal of a coastwide survey, ultimately it really was focused on Southern California, and at this time has been exclusively in Southern California for a few years. So this application is interested in exploring the experiment above Point Conception into a new area. And it really relates to a different application. The applicant's interested in exploring if box crab and king crab could provide an alternative market for crab when Dungeness crab is unavailable because of delays in the season start or early closure. And also would like to help fill gaps in essential fish information in a new area. So the department spent extensive time with the applicant and has reviewed it. The department's evaluation and its recommendation is provided in Exhibit 2 in your binder. The commission staff posted that information the very beginning of April to ensure that there was required time was for public review was complied with in the regulations. So in this case, this is the first time that the department is bringing a recommendation to deny this application. It's not for lack of merit, and we want to make sure that that's clear. It is, and the department recommends that the existing EFPs focused on similar gear and species in Southern California, as well as the similar gear in the Dungeness crab fishery in Central Northern California, be completed and evaluated prior to undertaking similar research in a new area for these species. And so we also just want to recognize President Murray, you already acknowledged that the commission adopted a new policy on coastal fishing communities. And considering the ongoing challenges faced by coastal fishing communities, such as the kinds of disruptive fishery closures experienced on the Central and Northern California coast and other stressors, the commission staff recognizes that the project is relevant to exploring adaptation strategies in these circumstances, and that it would be compatible with other EFPs approved by the commission. But recognizing that similar research in Southern California is ongoing and that results won't be available until data that currently being collected is analyzed, staff does support the department's recommendation. The EFP, just to note that the Southern California EFP was approved a year ago, but it just commenced in earnest recently due to delays in that experiment being able to be resumed. So the application is in your materials, as well as the department memo, and Dr. Schumann is available if you have any questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Susan. Sherry, how many speakers do we have on this agenda item?
We have 3.
Okay, we are going to take action on this one way or another. So if you could give everyone 3 minutes, please.
Brand Little, go ahead, please.
Thank you. I just want to thank the commission and commissioners for allowing me to talk here. I wish I could be there. My name is Brand Little. I'm the owner and operator of fishing vessel Pale Horse in San Francisco. I'm also the author of this EFP. I just wanted to talk briefly about the history of the box crab fishery, and I think that starts with Article 1, Section 8140, which specifically states, all fish, the taking of which is not otherwise restricted for commercial purposes by state or federal law or any other regulation adopted pursuant to those laws, may be taken at any time for commercial purposes. Basically, it says all fish can be taken at any time except, and then lists hundreds of pages of legislation that regulate what we can catch. Nowhere in that legislation was box crab ever mentioned. It was basically an open access fishery like coon stripes or rock crab. Box crab were taken and sold for decades without issue, usually alongside Dungeness crab in the commercial Dungeness crab fisheries bycatch. Somewhere in 2018, wardens in Half Moon Bay saw a couple of boats with box crab on board and weren't familiar with the species or regulations pertaining to them because none existed. This led to a Title 14 entry. And basically that Title 14, Chapter 6, Section 126, Subsection B says no more than 25 pounds of box crab could be retained as bycatch in the Dungeness crab fishery. Still to this date, nowhere does it state that box crab can't be retained as a targeted direct fishery that is granted under Article 1, Section 8140. So then we created Subsection 90 under Title 14 that said the department shall issue an EFP to any applicant for box crab statewide so the research can be done. I maintain that wasn't necessary. That section sunsetted on April 1st, 2023. The data at the time, the data under that EFP was showing a viable fishery. Again, it was statewide. It wasn't just SoCal. But the decision was made in the wake of the D-Crab lawsuit that California probably didn't want to add new vertical line fisheries at that time, which I agree, you know, probably not the best idea. Since then, the creation of pop-up gear has come about, and we feel this provides an opportunity to resume the targeted box crab fishery without exposing us to the risk of entanglement. We feel like the state and the commission should be promoting any and every fishery and fisherman that is willing to use pop-up gear. The box crab EFP will take us past the depths that we've been doing in the D-crab testing of pop-up gear. And the department acknowledges the validity and the necessity within the structure of the EPA that was authored by me, but maintain they don't have the in-house resources to administrate the biological analysis of the EFP. They cite too many open EFPs, and I think it's important to note that three of the seven EFPs are now defunct and not being used. All the other EFPs except for one require no biological analysis from the department. The one EFP that does have biological requirements has one participant currently operating in SoCal, and that's in the Southern Box Crab EFP. So just real quick here, fishermen have paid for all their licensing, permits, pot tags, registration, et cetera. They provide for 12 months of opportunity. Those fees go to administration enforcement. They go to fish checkers and the various ports to sample salmon. They go to facilitate 7 months of crab and 5 months of salmon, but we've been reduced to 80 days of crab and no salmon. So it's just not acceptable to deny this EFP based on a lack of resources. And we want this to be understood and really thought about by the commission as we ask for this EFP. And that's it. Thank you.
Kim Sawicki, go ahead, please.
Hi, thank you. Hopefully you guys can hear me okay. I'm Kim Sawicki from Sustainable Seas Technology. I currently hold the SoCal Box Crab and King Crab EFP. I was planning to give my time back to Brand Little. We do, obviously, we were very supportive of Brand and the other fishers putting forward this application. And we're disappointed to hear that it wasn't recommended. It's not being recommended. We think any opportunity for fishers to get back into the water in either current fisheries or exploratory fisheries utilizing pop-up gear is absolutely something that should be encouraged all the time. With that, I'd just like to offer any time back to Brand. Thanks.
Our final speaker is Jeff Schester.
Thank you, members of the commission. My name is Jeff Schester. I'm representing the conservation organization Oceana. I'm also serve on the Gear Innovations project team of the Dungeness Crab Fishing Gear Working Group. Oceana strongly supports this EFP application. A future fishery for box crab in Northern California has the potential for new coastal opportunities and markets for local fishing communities, which is very important in light of the recent salmon, crab, and groundfish closures that have previously been discussed. This EFP proposes to fish 100% with on-demand pop-up gear, also known as ropeless gear. It would build on the success of the previous Subsea Sonics and Guardian ropeless pop-up gear EFP for the Dungeness crab fishery, would expand the geographic scope and add spatial and temporal data, as well as allow data collection at deeper depths on ropeless gear, which could inform the use of pop-up gear in other fisheries with whale entanglement concerns that the commission has yet to address, such as the spot prawn trap fishery. The EFP is consistent with the existing Southern California box crab ropeless EFP in terms of the fishing gear and data collection, and we would hope that that this could be approved with similar terms and conditions. This would simply add fishermen and allow fishing in north of Point Conception up into Northern California, which also would expand the data biological data collection on the brown box crab. We commend the current box crab EFP participants in Southern California, and specifically wanted to commend the applicant, Brand Little, on this EFP, who's been an innovative pioneer that's worked with manufacturers to develop a method that has really demonstrated to be reliable and profitable in the spring Dungeness crab fishery. Having this supporting this type of proactive problem solver in the fishing community is really something that the commission should prioritize and recognize. We understand that CDFW supports generally the EFP on its merits, but is raising concerns that it does not have sufficient resources to manage it. This does raise broader concerns for the Commission's EFP program, and also raises the need to develop prioritization criteria for future EFPs. At this time, we would ask the Commission to prioritize addressing whale entanglements in the fisheries that it manages and indicate to the department that moving this EFP forward is a priority. And we would hope to get some clarity on the best pathway forward. Should this EFP be folded into the existing EFP for Southern California box crab, or are there changes that can be made so that CDFW can support it? We'd really like to see a path forward so that this important activity can proceed. Thank you very much for your attention and for all your work on this.
That concludes our speakers on this item.
Thank you. And thanks to folks that spoke on this issue. So we have sort of two issues, right? One is the collecting information that's already being collected, right? The proposed project kind of overlaps with previously approved EFPs. There were some issued in Northern California for the commercial Dungeness crab fishery that are testing the same gear as proposed in this application. And then there's an exploratory fishing EFP to collect data on box crab and king crab in Southern California that's testing the same types of pop-up fishing technologies at similar depths as proposed in this application. So one is like this issue that, well, we're kind of already doing these same field tests and testing the same kind of gear, same fisheries, same depths, and let's wait and see what kind of information we get from those first. The other is one of resources, and I am going to ask Craig to jump in maybe on this one. You know, in the staff report, it says that the department's workload managing AFPs is greater than originally anticipated when first implemented, and that it requires significant staff time and resources for four AFPs with up to 40 participants to test these kinds of gear. And then, you know, there's enforcement, scientific staff that have to engage in monitoring and the operations and ensuring compliance, communicating with participants, receiving data, processing requests for permit amendments, which can be time consuming. And we have had 7 minor and 3 major amendments already that have been completed or are under review. When I read that staff report on resources, by the department and the effort that it takes for the department to oversee these EFPs, it sounds different from the comment that we heard from the applicant, Brand Little, on this. And I wondered, Craig, if you could sort of help me square those two different sources of information.
Certainly. So, you know, these EFPs are a lot of work. That's a good thing. We want to do it. We want to get them right. So we currently, as you said, we've got 4 EFPs out there, 40 participants testing on-demand gear. We're just starting to get real data back. I actually got photos into my inbox yesterday of some of the gear that failed or some of the ground lines that broke. Very rare as far as we can tell, but that's something that we're really looking into is what is the viability of this gear moving forward for the shoulder seasons for the Dungeness crab fishery, potentially for other fixed gear fisheries, and now we're exploring in Southern California, expanding into a new fishery for box crab. So our recommendation is really based on working the bugs out of the gear, making sure we know what the strengths and weaknesses are, making sure we can track that gear underwater, not only the people that are using it, but other fleets or other fishers that may be fishing in that area. And from, you know, from my opinion, this is one of those instances where we want to slow down to go faster.
Isn't it? So Mr. Little makes a set of compelling arguments. I don't think the department's recommendation on this should be characterized as a no. I think it's actually more like a yes, but when. And, you know, Craig offers two reasons why the department is yes, but a little bit later. Get through some of the things that are currently underway that are directly related, and also then have the ability to move staff around to deal with the capacity from a new EFP. Those are real considerations. The commission can do whatever it wants here, but just recognize this is a group of folks at the department who are stretched pretty thin. Notwithstanding, they share the same values that Mr. Chester and Mr. Little expressed about pushing the exploration of this gear, because it's the right thing to do.
Mr. Director, when do you think that would occur? Is that next season? Is it two seasons from now, three seasons?
Craig, if we're going to take a position of yes, but it seems reasonable, we could also give some, you know, advice to Mr. Little. It's not a 10-year wait.
No, I think by this time next year, we'll have a lot more information about that gear that's in the water right now, even within the next 6 months. Something I will share is we did recently redirect a position, something that we rarely do. And we've created a new supervisory position to supervise our EFP staff because of the influx of interest and the importance of this. And so that project's going to be getting off the ground shortly. I believe they've just finished interviews and we'll be hopefully getting someone in the door in the next couple of weeks or months.
Greg, quick question. Is it really about the gear or is it about the resources to manage, you know, the EFP?
It's both. In my opinion, I think.
But how do you prioritize that?
Prioritize the gear over the resources?
Well, it's an issue of wanting to see what information comes out of these existing EFPs that are testing the same thing, same gear, same depth, same fisheries before approving new ones, right?
Yes.
Can I ask for clarification, maybe from Craig, on it says similar gear. Same gear, similar gear, what's different? Because it sounds like, you know, the details matter on this gear. How different is this gear?
So the gear that's proposed for this EFP is the same gear that's currently being used in other EFPs. What's different for this proposal is it's a new EFP for a different species in deeper water in Central California.
Okay, but it's the same gear. It's not like a different variation on it. I'm looking at Susan as well for.
I believe it's similar or maybe the same gear that's being tested in Southern California. I know it's configured a little bit differently between deep water and shallow. I think the applicant could probably share more details on the specifics of how they intend to use it, but it's the same technology.
Susan.
Thank you. There is a system that's described as a way to attach the gear. It is the same pop-up gear, but it's a different strategy for daisy chaining them together. I think they even called a trawl. And we didn't put that in the description because it can be confused with commercial trawl gear. The type of sled sort.
Yeah, so my understanding is there's a sled that deploys the buoy, and then that's attached to the traps.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, please, Commissioner Hessler-Carmison.
I like the yes, but not now. I really like that a lot. I think it, the more information we have, the better. And I do think it's in another area. So there could be some differences in Central California versus Southern California. I've heard, you know, support for the equipment one fisherman is a great proponent of the gear type. So I appreciate the work that the applicants have done and totally understand the department's constraints. So I'm happy to hear that it could be 6 months or more, and just encourage the applicants not to be frustrated or go away and continue moving forward.
Yeah, I would just like to weigh in that I agree with that and broadly. I mean, I think this is one of those cases where I'm looking at our coastal fishing communities policy and feeling like, yeah, this is something that we do want to prioritize. So no doesn't feel very good, given that these are directions that are, you know, promising and likely to be positive for both the fisheries and the fishing communities and the conservation objectives. So I guess I'm wondering, as a matter of procedure, like, do we say no? Do we continue this? What's the right approach, given that we're waiting for more information?
If I could say one thing, and I don't know if this is going to be the case or not, but, you know, Craig just mentioned that he just got some data back, that they just got some data back suggesting, you know, maybe there's some element that isn't as functional as they might thought it would be, or and perhaps that's unusual, perhaps it's not. What I think could make sense, you know, is that, and why I think maybe continuing it might not make sense, is what if the testing that's going on right now learns something that suggests, well, we don't want to just like copy paste the exact same approach for the next EFP, right? Maybe, I mean, ideally, we want them to be able to stand on the shoulders of the EFPs that are already out there, already testing gear. And if they learn something, then this applicant and future applicants might want to tweak something in their application to address what's been learned by the data that's been collected in the earlier EFPs.
Thanks so much for that, President Murray. I think from a, like, just in general, from a research cycle perspective, that makes a lot of sense. There's an opportunity here to apply the learning to, you know, maybe it's just small modifications to how this might get deployed in next year. Director Bonham.
Yeah, Director Bonham.
President, kind of playing off that idea, and I'm also, President, kind of following your last comment, and just one thing, let me check real quick. I think, actually, I don't know where Mr. Little is, but what if there's a way to, like, specify by when you'd like the department and Dr. Schumann and us to have really worked through incoming data and come back and, like, you know, offer advice on, like, how this EFP could evolve to the, like, some moment that's sooner than waiting for the applicant to come back that connects to this idea of the new, Greg will kill me, like, the new EFP supervisorial, like, let's lift up getting this data, working through this, as something you might consider if you're kind of moving to the no, but we want to do something versus like the yes, but later kind of.
Can I respond as the applicant?
I was just going to say, I see that Brand has his hand raised, and yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
So I wholeheartedly support, you know, I understand budgets and I understand, the Marine Division's just lack of resources. Honestly, I came into this meeting hoping for this outcome, which is, you know, basically what Mr. Schumann told me, that we're not saying never, we're just saying not now. Don't expect it to be approved. However, I do think it's vital, based on all the reasons I said, and I don't have a problem with saying, let's put this on hold. I wanted to come to this meeting so that, and I feel like I've accomplished exactly what I want, which is there's obvious support within the department and the commission so that this thing can be prioritized next year when we apply for it again. You know, as it's proposed, it's opposite of the decrab season. So we're talking about July 1st through December 30th. We're a year out from the next round of when we would like to use this gear. So I think we have a year, but I'd like to see the commission and the department prioritize it for acceptance next year.
Yeah, Brian, really appreciate that attitude, and thanks for that, for sharing that perspective. Chuck, do you feel like you got what you needed? Okay. All right. Craig, you too, in terms of data sharing and timelines, et cetera?
Yes, certainly. So we can also, if there's interest in the commissioner MRC, come back with some of the results when we have them, perhaps in the fall, looking at how this gear has worked throughout the spring season in Dungeness crab. And then, you know, on the other side, we've got this whole new fishery, this whole new species that we're trying to understand. How do we create sustainable harvest of this species independent of the gear we use to catch it?
Yeah, so November, probably.
Yeah, happy to do that.
Yeah, that sounds great. Vice President Zavalletta.
That was exactly where I was hoping to go with this, is that I think fall, like if we could come back to the December commission meeting with a report out from MRC, that puts us on track to be able to get that July target start date, like have that aligned. So I think that makes a lot of sense to me as well.
Perfect. All right. Would somebody like to make a motion?
I have a question. Can we include that in our motion? Can we wordsmith it a little bit to indicate that the commission denies at this time, with the understanding that Mr. Little will work with the department within the next year? Do we want to get into anything specific? I just think it would be great to capture the spirit.
I agree. Yeah.
So we can do we have Mike, about
does that
do more or less what
does that
Jackie
sound
just proposed?
Like a motion, or do we need more detail?
Yeah, I mean you do clearly have before you the current application. You have to say, you have to make a thumbs up or a thumbs down on that, but it's your prerogative if you want to add some direction, whether it's a request to the department, a commitment of yourselves. Any of that can be added into the motion, but also note that you're playing with things such as the MRC approval that you do you have. I can't remember if you've done it yet today. You haven't done it yet, so you could choose to, for example, do that in the context of the MRC approval. You could do both, but as long as if you do both, please be consistent.
Commissioner Hassel-Carmison, would you like to on the spot craft an amended motion?
I'll give it my best shot. I move that the commission denies at this time the EFP application 202401 to conduct exploratory fishing of the brown box crab and testing of on-demand buoy retrieval systems in deep water in Northern California, with the understanding that the applicant will work with the department in order to include new data and resubmit the application 1 year from now.
And in the future.
Yeah, friendly amendment that 1 year from now would be too late for next season.
Okay.
And it sounds like the timeline.
In the future is fine.
Yeah.
Is it resubmitting the application, though? Because the application will likely be, it could be different. A modified application.
Perfect.
Is that okay, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, regardless of how you frame it, I mean, the applicant's free to submit what application he wants.
But did that sound like a motion with all of us weighing in together? Okay.
Certain.
I'll second. So we have a motion by Commissioner Hassel-Carmison, a second by me. Sherry, could you read the roll?
Commissioner Hassel-Carmison.
Aye.
President Murray.
Aye.
Commissioner Anderson.
Aye.
Vice President Zavalletta.
Aye. So the motion passes unanimously. And just want to thank the department for the flexibility and committing to future actions, and also thank Brand for his just attitude and understanding and collaborative spirit. Thanks a lot for that. So that brings us to agenda item 28, which is regulation change petitions for marine. We're going to do new petitions and previously received petitions, and we will take public comment for 28A and B together. David, if you could make the call for public comment.
Thank you, President Murray. Good morning. Now is the time to raise your hand if you'd like to speak on item 28, regulation change petitions, both A and B. If you're speaking in person, you should have already submitted your speaker's card. Please raise your hand no later than 10:03. If you're participating on the Zoom webinar, please raise your hand and keep it raised. If accessing by phone only, please use the star 9 on your phone. Please press star 9 on your phone once to alert us that you'd like to speak. Pressing it again will take you out of the queue. When your name is called, you may need to unmute yourself by pressing star 6 on the phone or using the unmute button on Zoom. Once you raise your hand, please do not lower it. Staff will collect your name and lower all the hands at once. Again, if you are on Zoom and would like to provide comment on agenda item 28, regulation change petitions, please raise your hand no later than 10:03. Thank you.
Great, thank you. This is a standing agenda item for the commission to receive new regulation change petitions and to act on regulation change petitions received from the public at previous meetings. For today's meeting, there are two petitions that are scheduled for action. And the first is petition 2024-02 to reopen the recreational abalone fishery at San Miguel Island, Santa Barbara County for recreational and commercial take, commercial under specific conditions. And petition 2023-10, which was previously referred to the department for review, and is ready for action today to allow recreational anglers to donate fish to nonprofit organizations under a sport caught fish exchange permit. Staff recommendations for these petitions are developed with input from department staff and provided in Exhibit B1. And the recommendation is to deny the abalone fishery permit and to grant the donation, the request to donate fish for consideration in a future rulemaking. And just a note, a couple of notes, the rationale for the fishery is the petitioner did provide a video with extensive documentation at San Miguel Island. But there's no new formal density surveys that have been conducted by the department or other stakeholders since, for history, between 2006 and 2009, there was a formal San Miguel Island red abalone fishery consideration process. And at that time, the density standards that were set in the abalone recovery and management plan were not met through that survey. And so there haven't been new surveys since then. And the petitioner referenced Appendix H, that is an appendix to that abalone recovery and management plan. That's a stakeholder proposed approach from the time that the commission included in the ARMP. But new information isn't available to support the recommendation and the proposal at this time. So at the same time, the petitioner also talked about an experimental fishing permit potential pathway and did submit an initial application to the department. And what we're recommending is that the regulations provide for EFPs, provides an avenue for applicants to have an application consultation with the department and really discuss the merits of what might work or what might not work, and to explore what might need to be further developed, et cetera. And that's the department's team has reiterated that they're really interested in having that conversation. And so we recommend the petitioner pursue that option through initiating a consultation. And I also appreciate that Mr. Reebuck came all the way to Sacramento and had a meeting with commission staff, and we called in department as well. We had a really good conversation, and your associate, both of you are here today with your associate. So thank you for being here. Thank you very much. That's it.
I would just add that you have two letters also in your supplemental handouts related to this agenda item.
Thank you, Susan. Thanks, Melissa. Any questions or comments before we go to public comment? All right. Sherry, how many speakers do we have on this?
We have two.
Two. Okay. If you could give each speaker 3 minutes, please.
Okay. Will Stephen Reebuck and Edward Pierce please approach the podium in the room?
There we go. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stephen Reebuck. I live in San Luis Obispo. I'm the primary author of this petition, and I have written comment. May I approach the dais? Is that okay? I did submit written comment to you for the record. I wanted to start off with our proposal to fish 15,000 red abalone at San Miguel Island as proposed in Appendix H. And I wanted to address something that Commissioner Sklar had said in the past several times. I'll paraphrase him, that he was supportive of a fishery, but he wanted to make sure there was no damage done to the resource. And our position on this is that the abundance of red abalone now at San Miguel Island are sufficient enough that actually allowing this 15,000 animal take would improve the status and the health of the resource. We suggest within a year you'd see improvement. Regarding the abalone recovery and management plan, there's a requirement in that plan that there be recovery of abalone, various species, of 75% within their range. Now, I was a member of the Seattle recovery team for 11 years, the federal team, and I've studied sea otters since 1957, the first time I saw one. The density requirement for the minimum population is 2,000 animals per hectare. Fred Wendell, one of your biologists, reported in 1994, Cayucas, the densities are down to 70 per hectare at that time. And I would suggest that at this point in time, from Monterey to Gaviota, red abalone pretty much exported. It's really hard to find even shell debris on the beaches anymore. But that's something that should be addressed when you get around to your red abalone recovery plan. For the experimental fishery, Ms. Ashcroft said, I have submitted a proposal on February 2nd, and it has been received. We did have a discussion last week in Sacramento, and I'm willing to follow that direction from advice from the commission and the department. Now, to pay for this program, I know, I think Mr. Pierce will cede some time. Is that okay?
Sure.
I'll try to wrap this
up. Yeah, that would be great, Steve.
But what we're offering is a $10 per tag, fixed tag fee on these abalone that would generate $120,000 to $150,000 front loaded before one abalone is taken. And then I had an addendum. I wanted to cite a letter that was submitted to you by John Woodcock on June 8. And The citation is from the ARMP. I looked it up this morning, and this is what it says, quote, section 7.3.8, alternative 8, quote, the commission's preferred alternative limited abalone fishery at selected areas at a reduced density and prior to full recovery in all areas applies to recovery areas within the moratorium area. Now, this would seem to signal.
And Steve, I will need you to wrap
a legal green light to us. I would request a legal opinion from your Attorney General Counsel. Thank you for your time.
And so just to clarify, based on this letter, so you do plan to resubmit your petition as an EFP proposal. That is what you're planning to do.
Yes, ma'am. And again, I'd like to see a legal opinion on this last statement, because this seems to be a previous commission has already given permission to us for our proposal. So please, thank you.
Thanks.
Well, my name's Edward Pierce, and I came today just to, I kind of got cut short last time I was here, and I just want to reintroduce myself. I'm an ex-abalone diver and abalone processor, come from a long line of Splendid natives that started this back in 1929. And I basically came here to answer any questions that you might have, what are my intentions are, or any of that, to help this thing move along before it all completely, whoever's left with this knowledge and this history, you know, about abalone diving and harvesting and so on, to answer any questions that you might have. The biggest worry of my own self, I understand slowing down, doing that kind of thing, but as a Native American, we're the abalone's best friend. I'll tell you that right now. And you could take that to the bank or believe it, whatever you want to believe, but we're a people of honesty. We don't talk unless we mean it. We don't lie. And so I just want you guys to please, you know, take the time to look at this thing that we're trying to put together here. It's a good thing. It's there's no risk in any of the species, or that's the best part about abalone diving. I mean, we hurt nothing. We go into the water, we handpick everything, and we retain the knowledge. Well, in that experimental fishery, it allows for you as the public and whoever to learn from what we do by wearing the head pros and all that kind of thing. It's just a new wave of goodness to our fisheries. But I know the biggest thing we're fighting right now, as I know that you'll all see it clear to agree with me, but it's the process itself with the rest of the fisheries is overwhelming for you guys. I feel for you. But to go back on this abalone, we've gotten a lot of bad reputations along it should have never been. And I'm here to clarify that. That's my biggest, one of my biggest things is that we've been called the bad guys for too damn long. And we really are not. We are managers of a fishery that we haven't been given credit for. A lot of finger pointing. And
okay.
Anyway, so that's what I wanted to say. And so if you got any questions, please come at me.
President Murray, if I might.
Please.
Quick question.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, sir. I did not get your first and last name.
Edward Pierce.
Okay. And what tribe are you
Salinen.
From? I'm sorry?
Salinen. Yep.
You're talking about co-management. You're talking about traditional knowledge.
Yes.
That you have. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something we should continue to discuss with you.
Yeah.
And as a diver and as a Native American mm-hmm. a person, what do you see? I mean, I'm interested in that.
What do I see?
What do you see when you're diving?
I see abalones that are healthy and coming on in places, and I see where there is no abalone left, and I see there's reasons for each one of them were very easy to explain, and all of the studying is done is usually based on one thing, you know, about it, not the whole picture. And if you know anything about the ecosystem, it's the whole picture, what you need to see. And I was raised to learn all of that. And you don't take more than you can take just because you're called commercial. That's a miss. It just isn't done. It's not not in my religion anyway.
Right.
So
I would really appreciate it if you would send an email to the commission through the staff and elaborate a little bit more on your recommendations.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Any more questions or?
No, you can take a seat.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Any thoughts, questions, comments? Okay. Yeah, Vice President.
I mean, I just want to express that I'm really open to and interested in promising directions here and looking forward to seeing the EFB application. Do we have a sense of timeline at all on that? I'm sorry, that is a question for the applicant. Yeah.
As soon as possible, ma'am. It's been almost 30 years, and the resource is where it's healthy, like San Miguel Island example we showed with the video. They're dying of old age out there. And I know the commission in the past has been concerned about wastage. We're wasting a resource that's extremely valuable. It benefits the cities and the counties and the harbors.
And Mr. Rebeck, if I may, I'm really just wanting to ask whether you have a sense of timeline on the EFP application so that we have a sense of when to anticipate it. Like, is that 6 months,
well,
2 years? Is it?
If our petition has been denied, that means we got to wait 2 more years or another year to petition or?
Okay, well, we haven't made a decision yet, so I want
to. We're looking to get back in the water in August, if that's possible. I mean, this has been a long time that it's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we're dying off. The old ones, I mean, I've been training my daughters and the next generation, but if they can't get in the water, it's pretty.
Okay, all right, thank you. So Susan, if you could answer the question that Vice President Zavala had, and then I have a different kind of question. Yes.
So the application was submitted, the fee was not paid. So that means there's an opportunity for them to meet and have that conferring with the department, go through a process, however long it takes. It varies depending on how much the department recommends be revised, so that they could have an opportunity to submit a revised application, and then the department will need to go through its review once the fee is paid.
Thank you. So I have a different kind of question. You know, we have an abalone recovery management plan that has thresholds that must be met in terms of densities throughout the historic range of red abalone to allow any kind of take at all. Those thresholds have not been met, not even close to met elsewhere in the state, and in most of the historic range in California, I would venture to say. And so is an EFP even possible given that? I mean, we don't normally approve EFPs that are that are counter to existing management plans and guidance documents that we have in terms of an ARMP. So I'm just wondering, I'm a little uneasy setting expectations that, like, submit your EFP, let's go, we're all ready to approve it, because I do want to flag that there is a pretty serious issue related to our existing ARMP, what it dictates must be met in terms of density levels throughout the historic range. Those have not been met in any way everywhere else. So would it even be possible to approve an EFP? I don't know who that's a question for. I guess it's for Craig, because he's not in the room, and short six.
Well, with respect, and to buy Craig a moment. And also, I appreciate the persistence of the petitioner. They're actually the only public I can see in the room. So the commitment to drive this far speaks for itself. But I'm
not so new anymore, but still new to this topic. It seems like it's been a fight for 30 years since the practice stopped to begin with. I got to say, the commission needs to think about how it wants to manage its agenda items and think through like engaging on a petition and where you may want to end up, as much as the department needs to advise you on that. I think the president calls out a good question. Like, should we, you know, encourage EFP without first deciding if we should even approve an EFP because we have other controlling regulations? That's as much for y'all to have thought about before you get to this moment as for Dr. Schumann to advise on in the moment.
Yeah, fair point. Fair point. Craig, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Yes. So I think, as we previously stated to the applicant, Mr. Reebok, I would strongly encourage you to reach out to us to engage in pre-consultation on the EFP. We suggest that of all of our EFP applicants. Generally, when an EFP is submitted without that pre-consultation, there's some challenges. As Director Bonham pointed out, this has been going on a long time. It's very controversial. The commission has already weighed in previously. We're certainly open to exploring it, but I think we need to have a broader discussion with either the MRC or the commission about risk tolerance and prioritization in terms of, do we want to move forward with this and managing expectations, because it's a lot of work for the applicant. It's a lot of work for us. I don't want to do all that and then get to an adoption hearing and hear that it's not a viable path forward. So I think it would be good to be thoughtful in the approach and also recognize that we are in the midst of a Red Abalone recovery plan, because we were updating the ARMP, but now it's moved into recovery plan statewide. We're doing a kelp restoration and management plan. And the abalone team is also working on restoration of white abalone and black abalone, both of which are listed species.
Yeah, thank you for that. I if we need to have a conversation about risk tolerance more globally, I think that is a good conversation for the MRC. I feel like we have had a lot of conversations about risk tolerance at the MRC. I would love to get your thoughts on that, Susan. Do you think a more global discussion is necessary, knowing that there could potentially be, proposals like this and others coming down the pike, now that we've sort of pivoted to a different kind of approach on red abalone than what we were doing for a while, for several years, which was, fishery management plan, and now it's recovery planning. Do you think we need to have another conversation at the MRC about risk tolerance on abalone?
Well, it's a great question. I probably need to give it a little more thought. I don't think it's the good news is that I don't think we need to necessarily decide that before the July MRC. And maybe by the July MRC, staff can come back with some options for you to think about. There's multiple topics that have really emerged in the last few, with the last two, this and the prior topic, about what are priorities for EFP research. What are the capacities? There was a legal question that was raised in this case. And just the risk tolerance is a very significant question. In some cases, it's going to be topic specific. In this case, it certainly is. But the prioritization of EFPs also, in this case, dovetails into what Craig mentioned. Just the extended effort that the department is undertaking to develop recovery plans, which is no small effort. They both involve more than one work group, stakeholders and scientists. And so they're pretty comprehensive. They are comprehensive. So we can come back to the MRC if you're amenable to that and give some suggestions. Or You can decide now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything to decide now. Certainly, we're just sort of thinking about this in real time. And yeah, I think a future discussion about risk tolerance is important. It's not going to be in July, so maybe for now we can just table it, I think, for now, if that's okay. Yeah, we don't have Eric here, my co-chair, our co-chair for the MRC, and so I'm a little uncomfortable doing anything definitive in his absence. Yeah. All right. Well, with that, then I'm sorry, Steve. We are going to move forward with our agenda.
Well, unfortunately, I have to conclude. You're kind of boxing us in towards going to legal counsel on this.
I'm going to have to ask you to sit down.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. So, would somebody like to make a motion? I'm happy to make the motion. I move that the commission adopts the staff recommendation to deny petition 2024-02 and grant petition 2023-10.
Second.
So a motion by me, a second by Commissioner Anderson. Sherry, could you read the roll?
President Murray?
Aye.
Commissioner Anderson?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollister-Karmerson?
Aye.
Vice President Zavaleta?
Aye.
So the motion passes unanimously. And that brings us to agenda item 29, non-regulatory requests from previous meetings. And, oh, you want to take a break? Okay, sorry. Before we go to item 29, we are going to take a quick break. We'll take a 10-minute break. We'll be back at 10:40. Thanks.
All right.
Okay. Are we ready to reconvene? All right. Welcome back, everybody. We are now moving on to agenda item 29, non-regulatory requests from previous meetings. So, David, if you could make the call for public comment, and then we'll hand it over to our marine advisor, Susan Ashcraft.
Thank you, President Murray. Now is the time to please raise your hand if you'd like to speak on item 29, non-regulatory requests from previous meetings. Please, if so, please raise your hand no later than 10:49. If you are participating on the Zoom webinar, please use the raise hand feature on the application itself. If you're on the phone only and wish to raise your hand, press *9 once to alert us that you would like to speak. When your name is called, you may need to unmute yourself by pressing *6 on the phone or the unmute button on Zoom. Once you raise your hand, please do not lower it. Staff will collect your name and lower all the hands at once. Please listen carefully for your name to be called. Again, if you are on Zoom and would like to provide comment on agenda item 29, please raise your hand no later than 10:49. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, this is a standing agenda item for each meeting, similar to regulatory requests, but for receiving and considering non-regulatory requests from previous meetings. For today's agenda item, there were two non-regulatory requests that were marine in nature received at the April meeting that are scheduled for action. The staff recommendations developed in discussion with the department are provided in Exhibit 1 of your materials, and in this case, both of the requests were in writing, so they are also in your binder. I want to note that the first one, the commenter provided a pretty extensive history from the red abalone efforts over time and provided background materials that to support the red abalone statewide recovery plan. And so staff is that background documentation of the Abalone Working Group and California Abalone Association has been shared with the department and to consider within that recovery plan. So that should conclude that item. And then the second one was a request for the department and the commission to schedule a discussion about the potential future recreational harvest of gooseneck barnacles. And this is the context that they brought it up was that they're a mussel harvester and that they see mortality of gooseneck barnacles as they're harvesting mussels, and so they want to be able to retain them. So the staff recommendation is that the commission has previously denied this formalized regulation changes related to this for two reasons. The existing fisheries have already been prioritized for management focus under the Marine Life Management Act Master Plan framework. And then also just opening a new fishery for the petition species would require collecting sufficient data to determine sustainability, and that would redirect staff away from the prioritized management needs. And so the staff recommends no further action at this time as far as having a scheduled discussion. There has been a longstanding interest in this, but to date, no external partners have come forward either and conducted studies on the number of, just essential fishery information. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Sherry, how many speakers do we have on this agenda item?
We have no speakers.
All right, no speakers. What Susan laid out so thoughtfully makes a lot of sense to me. So I appreciate the explanation and the background and history. I don't have any questions or comments. And I don't see any from my fellow commissioners, so I'm happy to make a motion. I move that the commission adopts the staff recommendations for action on the non-regulatory request as reflected in Exhibit 1.
Second.
So a motion by me, a second by Commissioner Anderson. Sherry, could you read the roll?
President Murray?
Aye.
Commissioner Anderson?
Aye.
Commissioner Hostler-Carmison?
Aye.
Vice President Zavaleta.
Aye. So the motion passes unanimously. And that brings us to agenda item 30. And we are going to take public comment on 30A, B, and C all together. And David is going to give us instructions on giving public comment on 30A, B, or C.
Thank you, President Murray. If you'd like to provide comment on item 30A, B, and C, committee and department reports, please raise your hand no later than 10:54. If you're participating on the Zoom webinar, please use the raise hand feature. If you're participating only via phone, press the *9 to raise your hand. Pressing *9 again will lower your hand, so please leave it up so we can record your name. Staff will record all the names and lower all the hands at once. Please listen carefully for your name to be called. Again, if you're on Zoom and would like to provide comment on agenda item 30A, B, or C, please raise your hand no later than 10:54. Thank you.
Great, and that brings us to agenda item 30A, which is a tribal committee. And Melissa Miller-Henson is going to lead us through this.
Thank you, President Murray. Commissioners, your tribal committee is next scheduled to meet on the 13th of August in Fortuna. The previous tribal committee meeting in April had to be canceled, and as a result, we don't have any new information or new recommendations in general, with one exception. We're essentially asking the commission to reapprove the agenda that was previously approved, and that exception to the approval is a new item under next committee meeting, number 4, recreational take of barred sand bass. This is actually going to be discussed during the Marine Resources Committee in July. And so this would be an opportunity for tribal committee to discuss any recommendations that come out of the Marine Resources Committee for that particular item. But otherwise, the remaining agenda items, the standing agenda items, and the other three were approved previously in February. The other thing to note, so we're asking you to adopt that with those changes. And then the other thing that has changed is that the co-chairs, previously Commissioner Jackie Hostler-Carmison and Commissioner Darius Anderson, were appointed by the committee, the commission, in February as committee co-chairs. Commissioner Anderson had to step down because of other commitments that had previously been made. And I think he was pretty eager when he first joined the commission, thought he could do it all, and didn't realize we were going to keep him quite so busy. So the question for the commission then becomes whether someone wants to be appointed as a co-chair, or whether the commission wants to return to having visiting commissioners to that committee as we had previously done. And I don't know if Commissioner Jackie Hostler-Carmison has anything she'd like to add.
Thank you, Melissa. I'm really excited about this August meeting. It's going to be up in Portuna, and I'm hoping for a good turnout on the tribal committee. I'll be actively pursuing people and making sure they're there if I can. The only other thing I had was, I know previously Vice President Zavaleta was interested in co-chairing, and I would invite her to reconsider that if that's something she can fit in. With my extreme workload, sometimes I am not able to be here. So in the event I was not able to be here, I would feel really good that Vice President would be able to be my co-chair. Not to put you on the spot, you can give it some time and thought if you would like.
Thank you, Commissioner Hostler-Carmison. It's a question of time and not at all a question of interest and commitment to the important work that's happening in the committee. That just makes me sort of pause and agree that I should take a little time to think about it, because I think that it would involve me missing some meetings sometimes too. I'm really open to doing it though, if we can sort of correspond and figure out how to make that work well. And I think what I need to chew on is, am I really going to do two committees?
Right.
Because that's what that would be.
Right.
As long as everyone's comfortable with it, I'd like to take some time to think about it. And then, maybe for starters, see if I can attend as a guest at the August meeting. I'm not sure with my schedule at this point, whether I can.
That sounds wonderful. And yes, I'll support whatever you decide. If you do decide you'd like to do it, then we can always, coordinate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Could I also add one other thing? Commissioner Hostler-Carmison said, she's super excited about the August meeting. I too am also very excited about the August meeting, because by then we should have a tribal advisor and liaison who will support that committee and support our co-chair or chair, whatever that ends up being.
That's exciting. Yeah. And appreciate your openness to having a co-chair, Commissioner Hostler-Carmison, and your consideration. Totally understand the workload issue. And so we will revisit in the future. And in the meantime, it sounds like maybe Vice President Zavaleta might be able to go to the August meeting as at least a visiting commissioner. We do actually have a motion on this, but we are going to move on to 30B before we do any motions, because, of course, we want to take public comment on everything before. So 30B is the Marine Resources Committee, and Susan is going to lead this item.
Thank you, President Murray. Commissioners, your Marine Resources Committee will be meeting July 17th and 18th. And it's beginning in the afternoon on July 17th and continuing through the full day of the 18th. And the location has now been set. It is for Santa Rosa at the Regional Water Quality Control Board. So The two-day meeting is designed to provide focus time on the afternoon of July 17th to discuss the initial phase of evaluating marine protected area regulation petitions, and the remaining agenda items are proposed for July 18th. For July 17th, in addition to the standing items, the proposed topic, I just want to update you on what we're envisioning and are proposing for the 17th. The intent is to receive and discuss the department's proposed binning of MPA petitions into one of two bins, either bin one, meaning which petitions have been evaluated by the department to be ready to be evaluated in the near term relative to a criteria that were vetted with the commission previously, or bin two, if the petitions that require any additional either policy guidance, any additional information, or resources before a full evaluation can be conducted. That just to clarify, and that doesn't mean that the next step after binning would be to start to break them down into their discrete requests, and the department has highlighted that there are many that are proposed for bin two that they could move on in a more near term, but not until they're separated out. The department already has posted the draft document as of May 31st, a month and a half before the MRC meeting to provide public time to review prior to the committee. I just really want to express great appreciation of the department for that effort. They committed to posting it a month in advance and exceeded that. A copy of their blog post and the link to that document is provided in your meeting materials. It highlights that the public can provide comment once they review that directly through the commission, so that we can receive that and prepare it for the MRC meeting. So it shouldn't go to the department. It should come to us, to the commission. And then we'll discuss it at that time. And it's not intended to discuss the merits of individual petitions, but rather does the placement make sense, and discussing the next steps. Proposed agenda topics for July 18th. This is not a small list. It's a rather lengthy list. Because as you know, there are a lot of topics in the marine environment that are of particular interest. So the first is California halibut bycatch evaluation for fishery management review. Now, it's not to revisit the evaluation, but to talk about lessons learned, because that was the first opportunity to utilize the bycatch evaluation framework within the commission adopted master plan for fisheries. So to discuss how it went, are there any lessons learned to potentially apply in the trawl bycatch evaluation? Market squid fishery management and fishery management plan review the opportunity to receive the draft report from the Department Squid Fishery Advisory Committee process and initial recommendations now that those meetings have concluded. And commercial sea urchin fishing regulations, including consideration of the Sea Urchin Commission's petition for changes north of San Luis Obispo Monterey County line, and recreational crab options related to gear and entanglement concerns. And then there's two new topics that the department is recommending, and you already heard that recreational take barred sand bass. This is a very important topic, a conservation discussion the department's in with the recreational industry, and so opportunity to discuss the information that the department has analyzed and potential pathways, potential recommendations that are still, you know, in earnest being discussed with industry. And then electronic recreational fishing report cards rulemaking, that's the other topic. This has been an effort long that's been under development. And so it's an opportunity to for the department to present its proposed approach and for a potential committee recommendation. There are five topics proposed for updates, either in written format or verbal update, and those are listed in here. Red abalone, there's a red abalone recovery plan. Also, the committee had requested additional data on trawl gear tow time. The department will provide an update on its long intended review of commercial harvest of sea palm. An update on interagency coordination for applications for new aquaculture leases, and an update on the Coastal Fishing Communities Project. So we're requesting your input on that potential list. It is long. I think there are three topics in particular that could be a really substantial conversation, and that might be the most time intensive piece of that day too. Thank you.
Thanks, Susan. I was noticing that one of the proposed updates that we're going to get is on the Red Abalone Recovery Plan statewide. And so I thought that might be I could certainly imagine that a conversation could happen just a little bit about risk tolerance and the potential for future proposals and petitions that may be coming down the way, and just, you know, an early initial conversation about how we might feel about those kinds of things in light of the statewide landscape of abalone. I don't know that that means we need to agendize it any differently. I don't think we do. Does that sound right to you?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
I think that's sufficient. Thank you.
Perfect. Other than that, that looks great to me. So I don't have any other feedback. Except it sounds like a busy couple of days. Vice President Zavaleta.
Yeah, I think I'll raise it now because I'm not sure whether what I'm about to sort of just ask about makes sense to bring to MRC or maybe to ask for a report from the department to the commission on. But I just wanted to highlight that a lot of great progress is happening now on evaluating the binning of the petitions and so on from the MPA DMR sort of process. And, I was also sort of taking stock in some conversations over the last month of that set of really well-vetted recommendations that are in the Decadal Management Review that the department developed in consultation with stakeholders and tribes and sort of put a lot of, I think, very thoughtful work into making. We haven't had necessarily a lot of coordinated opportunity to discuss or to sort of prioritize, return to. So I would love to sort of move us to just sort of stepping into like the process of looking at those two. They cover a much wider range of types of things than the petitions do really, because they are across the board, regulatory, monitoring and research, tribal engagement and capacity. Like there's so many different kinds of things in there. So I guess my question is whether what would make sense is to ask for an initial report. I know the department is already working on many of these recommendations. And so I would love to maybe for a start have all of us have an understanding of what things they've prioritized, what things are already in progress, they're being worked on, and where there might be opportunities for us to help move forward on implementing some of the recommendations, either that they've prioritized or that we feel are particularly important. That conversation could start in MRC. On the other hand, it could start with a report back to us at the commission so that we also, for example, hear about progress on the tribal front that might be more relevant to conversation in tribal committee.
Yeah, thanks for raising that, Vice President Zavaleta. So as you mentioned, there is it Appendix 6A or something like that? There's the whole suite of recommendations under the four pillars of MPA, of the MPA management program. And that includes, compliance and enforcement. It includes governance and policy, outreach and education, science and monitoring. So there are these four pillars. We actually did this. What you're describing, we did start, right? Like when we had an MRC meeting. It was actually after the DMR day, March 2023. We said, hey, everybody, which of all these recommendations do you want us to prioritize? And so that was what we did on that day. We certainly came back in July, and it was registered that potential, you know, adaptive management of the MPA, the MPA network itself was a high ranking priority for everybody. So that's why that's taken up so much airspace. Yeah. But there was a, and I'm looking at Craig. Craig, just a heads up, I'm about to call on you. But there were other things that came up too that were clear priorities. You know, I think maybe a scientific collecting permit, streamlining or things like that. There were a few things that also got prioritized as like tier one. These are the things we want to start with from this big list of recommendations. And I don't have that at the ready in front of me right now. Craig might, but Craig, do you want to describe what some of those other priorities are if you do have it at the ready that we had sort of elevated to first tier, let's do these first, and or in response to Vice President Zavaleta's request, yeah, would you be comfortable, you know, giving an update on where those other actions are now, acknowledging that the adaptive management has taken up, as we knew it would, sort of all the air in the room and just such a significant amount of resources by the department.
Really appreciate the question. Thank you. I don't have those at the ready in front of me right now. We can certainly go back to the notes and see what came out of that meeting. What was it, a year plus ago? As you noted, the petition process has really been the primary focus, and I would welcome a discussion with the MRC and or the commission to try to find the balance of, you know, where do we want to focus our effort and the effort of our partners and tribes, because there are a lot of other recommendations out there. And I think it would be a loss if we only focused on the petitions, but we've just got to find that balance.
Totally agree. And I know that's of particular importance to you too, Craig. It's something you've mentioned a lot. Like, look, there are a lot of recommendations that came out of the DMR. There are four pillars, not just one. So let's not just focus on this one thing. So I really appreciate you raising it, Vice President Zavaleta.
Thanks. I guess I might ask, I don't want to put you on the spot, Commissioner Hostler-Carmison, whether you are interested in having some kind of report back to the whole commission to be able to hear about the progress or needs on the tribal coordination recommendations. So, Craig, would it be reasonable for us to just ask for that to be part of the report back from the Marine Region at the next full commission meeting?
I think so. Yeah, we can discuss what we've been doing and where we would like to move forward, and we'd welcome that discussion with the commission.
Yeah, that's great. And I thank you, Commissioner President Murray, for reminding me that, yes, we did dip our toes into this, but it has been like 15 months. So just to keep that conversation live and keep us all updated. I mean, I think updating like on the order of once a year makes a lot of sense.
Definitely. And tribal coordination, enhanced tribal coordination, was certainly one of those top priorities that came out of that conversation that we had about what do we want to prioritize. So lots of dovetailing here, and I think it's a really good idea. Yes,
President Murray, thank you. I want to your counsel here reminded me to highlight that we would like approval to update the work plan to talk about box crab in November. It's already an agenda topic on the work plan. It just doesn't have any X's next to it.
Sure.
Thank you.
Should that be a part of the motion once we do make a motion, which yes. We're of course not doing now, but yes, we can add that. Yeah. Thank you. All right. So next up is item 30C, Department Marine Region Report. Welcome, Craig.
Thank you. So we're bringing it home here. Razor clam update on May 2nd, 2024. The recreational razor clam fishery in Humboldt County was closed due to domoic acid levels exceeding the 20 ppm threshold. Those were from clams collected on April 24th. The last domoic acid fishery in that county occurred on April 21st, 2023, and then opened on August 7th. The fishery in Del Norte has been closed since November 9th, 2023, and remains closed. The department continues to work with the California Department of Public Health and the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment to determine when the razor clam fishery can be safely reopened in these areas. And you know, as we've seen over time, we're getting opening and closing. This is probably our new normal, unfortunately. The 2024 Ocean Salmon Fisheries Auto Conformance Process is an annual regulatory process following procedures provided in Title 14, Section 1.95, to conform state regulations to federal regulations for recreational ocean salmon fisheries. Although California is in its second consecutive year of closures for the recreational fishery, this regulatory process must still take place to appropriately codify the season closures and state regulations. The automatic conformance process outlined in Title 14 requires that an update be provided to the Commission on the final regulatory actions. On April 10th, the Pacific Fishery Management Council acted unanimously to recommend closure of California's commercial and recreational ocean salmon fisheries through the end of the year. At the same time, preliminary regulations for 2025 were set for fisheries occurring prior to May 16th. This follows the standard regulatory timeline, which sets regulations on a May 16th present year to May 15th following year timeline. In 2025, recreational fishing seasons are set to open on April 5th. However, at its March 2025 meeting, the council will determine if changes to these previously adopted regulations are needed based on newly available stock status information. I'll pause there.
That sounds great. Thank you. And does that conclude your report, Craig?
Yes, I will conclude there. I should have, should have been more clear.
A very long pause. Okay. Okay. Does anyone have any questions for Craig? You do. Okay. Commissioner Hassler-Carmison.
Good morning, Craig. I would like to ask you about testing and monitoring of razor clams. I've received some inquiries regarding what specific protocols are being followed for the testing and monitoring of the domoic acid levels. And then another question that came in was collecting them from one spot on the beach. Why would we not test more than one location? And that is in the chart under the longitude and latitude.
So the testing protocol is developed in conjunction with California Department of Public Health, largely takes an opportunistic approach based on where we can get samples from, depending on tides, weather conditions. I think in a perfect world, we would be getting much more samples from a broader area. But at this point, it's getting as much as we can. And if we get samples from one site that's hot, then that's what triggers the closure.
So, Commissioner, this is representative of a similar and larger dynamic in the Dungeness crab fishery around domoic acid. The standards and the decision making primarily is at a sister agency, not our department, so public health. And that's an obvious reason why you don't want the public eating something that's not, you know, safe. And the department and razor clam, Craig, correct me if I get this wrong, isn't actually the sampler. And it would be kind of unusual and way outside our budget ability to have a sampling program that we're directly running. So then you get into the space, well, how? And it's a reliance in Dungeness crab with fleet and here with people that are out, you know, doing the activity. Is it ideal? No. Do we think it could be better? Yes. But, you know, we're kind of using what has been working and making decisions in that manner. Craig, please, if I missed anything there.
No, that's accurate. I think, you know, when we have staff available, and I know we do participate when we can, but again, it's largely opportunistic to try to get samples when and where they can and feed those into the public health lab.
I appreciate that, Director, and Dr. Shimon. Razor clam is a very important species for everyone, and especially the tribal members that and elders. So digging in and trying to figure out if there is any additional information or effort that could happen. And I agree, we don't want to eat it if it's high in domoic acid. Thank you.
All right, seeing no other questions, Sherry, how many speakers do we have on this agenda item?
We have no speakers that raised their hand while the queue was open, but we did have a couple come up after it closed.
Okay. All right. We do have a few motions that we need to make for agenda item 30, if somebody would be willing to make those. We have the tribal committee one, which I'm happy to make. I move that the commission approves the changes to the tribal committee work plan and approves the agenda topics for the August 13th, 2024 tribal committee meeting as discussed today.
I'll second.
So a motion by me, a second by Commissioner Hostler-Karmason. Sherry, could you read the roll, please?
President Murray?
Aye.
Commissioner Hostler-Karmason?
Aye.
Commissioner Anderson?
Aye.
Vice President Zavalletta?
Aye. So the motion passes unanimously. And on 30B, I move that the commission approves the changes to the work plan as mentioned earlier in the discussion by Susan. And approves the topics for the July 17th to 18th, 2024 Marine Resources Committee meeting as discussed today.
And I'll second.
So a motion by me, a second by Vice President Zavalletta. Sherry, could you read the roll?
President Murray?
Aye.
Vice President Zavalletta?
Aye.
Commissioner Anderson?
Aye.
Commissioner Hostler-Karmason?
Aye.
And the motion passes unanimously. We have no motion on 30C, so that brings us to agenda item 31A, which is administrative items. We're going to take public comment on agenda items 31A, B, and C, and D together. So David is going to give us some, I think we can include D as well. Is that okay? I know it just says A, B, and C. David is going to give us some notes on public comment for commenting on agenda item 31. And then we'll hand it over to Melissa. Somebody's welcome music. It's David's welcome music. David, are you there?
I am. Sorry about that. Now is the time. Thank you, President Murray. Now is the time to raise your hand if you'd like to speak on items 31A, B, C, and D. Please raise your hand no later than 11:24. If you are participating on the Zoom webinar, please raise your hand and keep it raised. If you're participating via the phone, please press star 9 on your phone to alert us that you'd like, that you wish to speak. If you are, if you would like, when your name is called, you may need to unmute yourself by pressing star 6 on the phone or using the unmute button on Zoom. Once your hand is raised, please do not lower it. Staff will collect your name and lower all the hands at once. Please listen carefully for your name to be called. Again, if you are on Zoom and would like to provide comment on agenda item 31A through D, please raise your hand no later than 11:24. Thank you.
All right, Melissa.
Thank you very much, President Murray, commissioners. Item 31A is your administrative items legislative report. You do have in the meeting binder staff summary that summarizes bills of interest that we've been tracking, and as well as the legislative calendar highlights. I will note, as I mentioned yesterday, the budget bill was passed on June 15, so we have a sense for where things are heading at that point. The legislature has been very busy, continues to be very busy. Last day for policy committees to move bills out is July 3rd. So next couple of weeks are going to be continue to be super busy. I'm not going to go through all the bills. If there's any in particular that you have questions about, they're listed here. And you also have the department's legislative report for the bills that the department is monitoring during this second half of the legislative session. That is all I have on legislation, if you want me to move to B. Okay, so item 31B, these are our rulemaking timetable updates. There are a number of changes here that were requested. We've already talked about federal ground fish and associated species. There is a request to add electronic report cards as a rulemaking and emergency regulations for mandatory testing of chronic wasting disease. We also talked about yesterday, but this is the official summary of all of those changes to the timetable. There's a copy of the timetable as an exhibit, and the changes are highlighted. The proposed changes are highlighted in strikeout and underline blue color so that folks can easily see those. So we'll be asking you to approve those changes to the rulemaking timetable. I do believe we had one other change potentially yesterday. I'll ask Ari to ponder that for a moment, if he can remember what that was, before we come back for a motion on that.
It was the 2084.
Thank you.
Sturgeon.
Yes. So in addition to these changes, proposed addition of a potential 2084, you had requested the department to come back with a proposal for perhaps even options on a 2084 at your next meeting. All right. Then moving on to 31C. Proposed dates and locations for 2026. I mentioned this briefly yesterday, but I'll mention it again. Really, the focus, given the budget situation and the fact that we're going to be moving, at least in the foreseeable future, meetings to Sacramento or via webinar and phone due to the budget situation, we don't have a lot of clarity to be able to anticipate what 2026 is going to look like. So at the moment, really, we're asking you to focus on the dates. The locations could potentially end up changing in the near future anyway. So 2026 dates, there is a list of potential dates on the second page. There's a table there of the staff summary. And if you could take a look at those between now and August, and we'll come back in August to finalize those dates. As you may recall, the reason we do this so far out in advance is because when we do meet in person, it has been incredibly difficult to locate facilities that can meet our needs, both from a cost perspective as well as a technology perspective. And we found that the amount of time necessary to not only locate a facility that can work with us, but then to also get through the process of a contract and getting that approved takes quite a bit of time. So hence why we ask for them so far in advance. So again, the ask there is to just take a look at those between now and your August meeting, and we'll come back and hopefully get those approved then. All right. And then your, and I'm sorry, related to meetings. Sorry, this is also related to 2026. We do want to confirm that, again, this goes back to the dates, Wednesday, Thursday for commission meetings, MRC meetings on Thursdays, WRC meetings on Thursdays, and tribal committee meetings on the Tuesdays immediately prior to three of the six commission meetings, which is the schedule we've had for a couple of years now. We just want to affirm that that's still the case when we come back in August. Then item 31D, this is your future meetings and new business. So the next commission meeting, again, scheduled in Fortuna, August 14 and 15. We will also have phone webinar options for the public. Well, that meeting will be preceded by the tribal committee meeting, as we discussed a few minutes ago, on the 13th. We talked in great length about dates, locations, et cetera, so I'm not going to repeat that again. But you also have an exhibit here for potential agenda items for that August meeting that staff is asking you to approve, and that's exhibit one. And then we just talked about the other addition to that would be the 2084. Any questions on any of that?
I have a very specific thing on the dates.
I know we're going to come back to it at the next meeting, but the first WRC meeting in 2026, that's for January 15th. I actually do know that I would like to ask whether we can move that to Tuesday, January 13th, to get it away from another conflict. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for that.
And I emailed you a proposed date location concern also, even though I know we don't have to worry about locations probably, just in case. Anyone else? Questions, comments on 31 A, B, C, or D? Okay, how many speak? Sorry, Commissioner Hassler Comison.
But it can hold until if you want to go to speakers first.
Sure. Sherry, how many speakers do we have on this?
We have one speaker.
One speaker?
Yes.
Okay. Let's give the speaker 2 minutes, please.
Jamie Dimon, go ahead, please.
Apologies, I lowered my hand. I'm good. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so too. All right, Commissioner Hassler Comison.
I just want to call out AB 1284. It's Assemblyman Ramos's bill, and it's regarding the tribal ancestral lands and waters, and Melissa has highlighted it. Regarding co-governance and co-management agreements. This is really great work being done by the Rezegeni tribe of Yurok people. And it has been moved to committee, and we're just really excited about it. So special shout out for Rezegeni on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. That's wonderful. All right, so with that, we do have a couple motions to make under agenda item 31, if somebody would like to make them.
So I'll do the first one on B. I move that the commission approves the proposed changes to the rulemaking timetable as discussed today.
Second.
So a motion by Vice President Zavaleta, a second by Commissioner Anderson. Sherry, could you read the roll?
Vice President Zavaleta?
Aye.
Commissioner Anderson?
Aye.
Commissioner Hostler-Carmison?
Aye.
President Murray.
Aye. So the motion passes unanimously. And then 31D also has a motion.
Okay, I'll move that the commission approves the draft agenda items for the August 14th to 15th, 2024 commission meeting as amended during this meeting.
I'll second.
So a motion by Vice President Zavaleta, a second by Commissioner Hassler Carmison. Sherry, could you read the roll, please?
Vice President Zavaleta.
Aye.
Commissioner Hassler Carmison.
Aye.
Commissioner Anderson?
Aye.
President Murray?
Aye. The motion passes unanimously. And that takes us to our final agenda item of this meeting, which is item 32, general public comment. David, if you could give us instructions on commenting.
Thank you, President Murray. Now's the time if you wish to provide comment on item 32, general public comment, please raise your hand no later than 11:34. If you're participating on the Zoom webinar, please use the raised hand function to raise your hand and leave it up, please. If you're participating on the phone only and like to raise your hand, press *9 to raise your hand once. Pressing *9 again will lower your hand. So please raise your hand and leave it raised. Staff will collect all the names of the speakers and lower all the hands at once. Again, if you're on Zoom and would like to provide comment on agenda item 32, general public comment, please raise your hand no later than 11:34. Thank you.
Thanks, David. And just as a reminder, so this is for comments that are within the commission's authority that are not included on the agenda. And a reminder that we cannot discuss or take action on any matter raised during this agenda item, except to decide whether to place the matter on the agenda of a future meeting. It looks like for now we have five speakers. I know we still have another minute before we close the queue, but Sherry, if you could take us through the queue and give each speaker 2 minutes, please.
Sherry Hafer, go ahead, please.
Hi, I'm Sherry Hafer. Hold on. Sorry. You put yours down lower. I still have them. Okay. So I am a director of Central Coast Women for Fisheries and the REACT Alliance and a wife of a 50-year-old 50-year commercial fisherman. I'm here to ask that any decisions related to the coastal development permits for site assessments for offshore wind energy be agendized. This includes scientific collection permits for protected areas. There are many concerns regarding the impacts of high-resolution geographic surveys on our fisheries and other marine life. Equinor Wind Company has said they are using up to 240 decibels of very low frequencies. Acoustic specialists have said that at these high of decibels, even if the noise is not heard, it can cause tissue damage. Also, small bait fish such as sardines and anchovies are susceptible to injury and behavior changes. Impacts to the bottom of the food chain affects the entire ocean. Equinor is applying for a CDP to do HRG survey work inside state waters between Cambria and Port San Luis. These areas include essential environmentally sensitive habitat areas, the Morro Bay Estuary, habitats of particular concern, and a marine protected area, and threatened and endangered species, and many sport and commercial fisheries. They have plans to do HRG work right adjacent to Point Bichon NPA. Sound travels much farther in water, especially at high decibels. This should not be allowed. This issue is too important for the public to be decided in a back room by staff. Please agendize the issue of SCPs for offshore wind and any other conversations about offshore wind in state waters. Thank you.
And our second Hafer speaker. Go ahead, please.
What's going on?
You need to unmute. We have we have Sherry Hafer logged in twice, but I believe one is probably Tom Hafer.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's okay. Tom, you're next. Go, go, we're on here. Okay, go ahead. Okay. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes. We can hear you, Tom.
Okay. Good morning, commissioners, President Murray, Melissa. This is Tom Hafer, commercial fisherman out of Morro Bay, and the president of the Morro Bay Fishing Organization. So I hear a lot of talk about more MPAs in California. We have 124 right now. That's 16.2%. They say that we need 30%. That would be another 13.8%. That would be around 80 more marine reserves. We have four different regions. That could be up to 20 marine protected areas in each region, maybe more. I was on the first go around on this, and you know, they took all our best fishing areas away that first round. I mean, they left us some area, but if the Fish and Game Commission is on board with adding more MPAs to the state of California, it'll definitely put a lot of guys out of business. I mean, I don't see the threat. I mean, there's not that many of us fishing anymore. So I see a lot of people pushing completely no-take areas. You know, that I don't think that's a good idea. I mean, don't we have enough already? And, you know, there's no evidence. Ray Hilborn paper, A Biodiversity Framework for USA MPAs in the U.S., you have to include threats and solutions. There's not really any threats. I mean, we can't see. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Amina Kurbeshi. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon, commissioners. As stated, my name is Amina Kurbesh. I'm a law student at Golden Gate University School of Law, and I have a deep appreciation for coastal areas since I have lived in the Bay Area and previously attended Mills College. As an ecology and evolutionary biology student at Mills, I had many opportunities to explore and work in local protected areas throughout Marin County. Conservation of marine protected areas is very important to me, which is why I want to voice my support for MPA petitions 2023 through 33, excuse me, through 31, MPA Drake's Estero, and 2023-32 MPA the Duxbury Reef. I support these requested petition changes for Duxbury Reef and Drake's Estero SMCAs to state marine reserves. As someone who studied ecology, I have seen the importance of conservation locally and the damage that can be caused by overvisitation at places like Duxbury Reef. I want to emphasize the importance of ensuring that our MPAs are connected habitats, which is why I also support expanding the boundaries of Duxbury Reef so that contiguous reef is included. Related to Drake's Estero, uniform regulations should be upheld with uniform habitat between Drake's Estero and Estero de Lamentor. In claiming disturbances after previous oyster damage could disrupt healthy marshes and seagrass beds, which are experiencing national declines. As the only marine wilderness on the West Coast, south of Alaska, this is an opportunity to lead by example and set concise regulations to protect future marine wilderness. Thank you for considering my comments.
Our next speaker is Keith Rootsart. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. Keith Rootsart, founder of the Giant Kelp Restoration Project in Monterey. On February 1st, I emailed Dr. Schumann about a floating Sargassum horneri sighting at Tomales Bay by researcher Angela Zepp from NOAA. We were very concerned by the sighting of reproductive adults 250 miles further north of our last sighting, where several individuals were removed by the department on June 4th, 2020, of Sargassum horneri found at the breakwater wall in Monterey, which is 420 miles north of the Sargassum fields of the Northern Channel Islands. Hopkins researcher Dr. Stephen Palumbi found eDNA traces of Sargassum horneri on 60% of the cobbles they sampled in Monterey and Carmel Bays. The spores are already present, and if the recurring opportunity of warm water presents itself, we worry Sargassum horneri could outcompete our native kelp, like what happened in the Southern California bite. So I'm asking for a status update from Dr. Schumann. What is the good word? Thank you.
Our next speaker is Alina Razi. Go ahead, please.
Hello, commissioners. My name is Alina, and I am a UCLA Environmental Science and Policy student speaking today as an intern with the Biona Wetlands Land Trust. Thank you all for your dedication to public service and management of so many properties across the state, but I would like to implore the commission to please keep the environmental and educational value of the Biona Wetlands Ecological Reserve in mind during your considerations. I believe that prioritizing the consideration of equitable access for all our community members to the wetlands will be greatly beneficial, as this land is what they are surrounded by. Recently, I've been able to be a part of some really great events that the Land Trust organized. We hosted nature walk field trips with the La Biona Elementary School, which allowed them to build upon the science curriculum they were learning. And some students had even learned facts memorized by the end of the trip. We also hosted trainings for the Dorsey High School student interns to help teach them environmental awareness and species identification. And yeah, so public access to the wetlands offers really great educational benefit to our local communities that come to learn about the environment and how our local ecosystems function despite the current modern urbanization of the area. Thank you so much for your time.
That concludes our public speakers.
Thanks so much, and thanks to our speakers. I think Craig and Keith can talk offline about Keith's question. I did just want to, for the sake of clarification, in response to Tom Hafer, Tom and Sherry, it was just Tom's comment. Maybe you could connect with Susan offline as well, just to learn more about what is and what isn't happening. Sort of thought about whether to respond to this or not, but I did just want to say, there is an adaptive management process happening within the commission purview, that is to review petitions that we've received for changes to MPAs. We've received quite a lot of petitions for changes to our existing MPA network. There is not a separate process to create new 30 by 30 MPAs. 30 by 30 is not what's driving our MPA petition review process. It's being driven by adaptive management. And then there is also a separate 30 by 30 process happening under the leadership of the Ocean Protection Council. They've got a draft decision-making framework that is open for public comment right now. So if you want to connect Tom with Susan, she can give you more information about that. But I did just want to clarify some of the things you were saying were, even if we approved every petition there is, we would not be creating another, 80 MPAs or something like that. So just wanted you to know that for the sake of clarification. I did misspeak and say that we were on our last agenda item, which is open public comment. We actually still have our executive session. Our attorney reminded me, of course. And so we're going to go do our executive session, and then we will come back and report out, and then we will adjourn for the day after that. Do I need to say a time that we will be back? How long will it take?
The short answer is no, but I wouldn't expect that it would take more than a half hour.
Okay. All right. So we will be back no later than 12:15, but potentially earlier, as early as 12. We'll be back between 12 and 12:15 to report out on our executive session, which is our last agenda item of the day. All right. With that, we will recess. Thank you. All right. So we are reconvening back from executive session. And our attorney, Mike Yon, is going to report out on the happenings there.
Thank you for the mic assist. And thank you, President Murray. The commission met in closed session and discussed matters on the commission's closed session agenda, executive session agenda, and the commission voted to suspend John Bowling's Dungeness Crab Vessel permit for a period of 1 year in agency case number 24ALJ04-FGC.
Thanks, Mike. And that concludes our agenda for the June 19th to 20th, 2024 meeting of the California Fish and Game Commission. Thanks to everybody, AGP, commission staff, department staff and leadership, everybody in the room and online for your engagement and attention. And with that, I will officially adjourn this meeting.